It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Great panel for you. Paris Martineau from The Information, Devendra Hardawar from Engadget, from Six Colors, Dan Morin. We're going to talk about what to expect with Apple's Tuesday event, Apple Silicon. What's that going to mean for the computer industry? Devendra has reviewed both the new Xbox and the new PlayStation. He'll have a head-to-head comparison for us. And then we'll talk about how the election might change the government's relationship to big tech. It's all coming up this week on TWiT. This Week in Tech comes to you from TWiT's LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether employees are working in the office or remotely. Visit LastPass.com/TWiT to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 796, recorded Sunday, November 8th, 2020. Celebrity Jeopardy in Heaven. This episode of This Week in Tech is brought to you by IT Pro TV. Get professional IT training with the experts. Visit itpro.tv/TWiT for an additional 30% off all consumer subscriptions for the lifetime of your active subscription. Use the code TWIT30 at checkout. And by Worldwide Technology. Worldwide Technology's Advanced Technology Center is like no other testing and research lab, with more than $500 million of equipment, including OEMs like Dell Technologies. And it's virtual, so you can access it 24/7. To learn more and get insights into all the ATC offers, go to wwt.com/TWiT. And by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage. Thinking about moving your data storage to the cloud? Wasabi's enterprise-class cloud storage at 1/5 the price of Amazon S3 and faster than the competition, with no fees for egress or API requests and no complex storage tiers. Start a free trial at wasabi.com. Enter the code TWIT. And by NetSuite. Get visibility and control over your financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more with NetSuite by Oracle. Now's the time to upgrade to the world's number one cloud business system. Let NetSuite show you how they can benefit your business with a free product tour right now at netsuite.com/TWIT. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news with a fine bunch of tech journalists from The Information. She's a reporter there. Paris Martineau, we've known her for years. It's so great to see you, Paris.
Always great to be here.
Love to have you on. Same with you, Devendra Hardawar. He is a senior editor at the fabulous Engadget. Wait, we're
going to... Hello.
We're going to push the button. There he is. Oh, you're at work today. No.
Oh, no. I mean, home office. Home I'm office. Slowly building out a home office in my basement.
It kind of looks like work.
It is happening.
Yeah.
Is that good or bad? I don't know, but I'm very productive down here, so I like it.
Devendra was prescient enough to move to Georgia just in the nick of time.
We need the votes.
We need the votes.
Come on.
Two more votes. They're coming in. Also joining us from Massachusetts, Mr. Dan Morin of SixColors.com and the Great Clockwise Podcast. Hello, Dan. It's good to see you.
Hi, Leo. Good to see you, too.
Welcome to the show. A couple of things to mention. I think the election is mostly over. We've stolen all the votes we can. And
don't tell
make
them.
Make him so angry, Leo. You're going to make him so angry.
Don't tell them. It's a secret. And so that's good news. We can, you know, we can breathe again. And then there's some sad news. After 36 years as host of Jeopardy, Alex Trebek passed away today at the age of 80. As you know, he had cancer, announced it on the show, continued to do the show. I understand there are new Jeopardies going through Christmas, and then I don't know what they'll do. They'll have to do reruns, I guess. I think from now on, we're going to answer all questions. All answers will come in the form of questions on this show in honor of Alex Trebek. So we miss him. I was talking to our photography guy who lives in Germany, Chris Marquardt. He said, oh, yeah, I heard about Alex Trebek. I said, did you watch Jeopardy? He said, no, we don't get it in Germany, but everybody knows Alex Trebek all over the world. He said,
He's an institution.
He said, at the Chaos Computer Club, when they're arranging the chairs to make more room, getting everybody to, you know, defrag the room, everybody does the Jeopardy theme. Da, 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 da. So I guess, yeah, it's kind of universal. That's in Berlin. That's kind of universal. So, Dan, you're going to be busy. We're all going to be a little bit busy on Tuesday. Apple is having its One More Thing event.
Oh, boy.
Just one. Third event of the fall. I cannot believe they got that many in.
Apple's going on longer than the 2020 presidential election. This is an endless supply of Apple news. It's expected, especially because the AR invite had an Apple going up like a laptop lid, that they will be announcing laptops. Almost certainly based on Apple Silicon, right?
Yeah, I mean, that seems to be the big thing that's left for them to talk about this fall. They've already revamped the iPhones, the iPads, the HomePod, pretty much everything. So the Mac is about the only thing left in their lineup. And the Apple Silicon rumors have been running pretty fast and furious for a while now. And, you know, there's a certain logic to it. Obviously, they switched to Intel 15 years ago. And they, have been increasingly moving more and more of their critical infrastructure under their own roof. So since they're building all these great processors for iOS devices, it seems only logical that they'd want to bring them over to the Mac as well. I mean, it seems like the potential for huge gains is really significant. So I'm excited to see this. I've been waiting for this for a long time, and I think we're going to be pretty blown away by what they have to offer.
Is in a way, this seems like a new era, the end of an era with Apple Intel. But Intel itself has been struggling, not just on the Apple platform. Even Microsoft's looking at ARM, and certainly data centers are looking to ARM, and NVIDIA for their processors. You have to wonder if this is the beginning of the end for Intel.
I think they could dig stuff out. I mean, I would never bet against them because they are so big and they have such a deep bench, but they definitely, their miss in terms of mobile was a really big deal, right? They never really competed in mobile platforms, and they were sort of bound to the desktops and laptops. And I think that has done a lot of damage to them, and they've tried to dig themselves out of that hole, and they have not had a lot of success with it. So as the sort of influence of the desktop and laptop computer starts to wane a bit and people are more and more using tablets and smartphones to do everything in their lives, Intel and to a lesser extent AMD have both, you know, suffered, I think, as a result of that.
Intel,
most definitely.
It certainly has. It's a big company and probably has a lot of patents and intellectual property, but they're also saddled with $10 billion chip fabs that are becoming less and less valuable by the minute. I have to wonder, that's Ben Thompson's contention. He said this 2 years ago, that Intel's big mistake was both designing the chips and making them. That's exactly what ARM does not do. And that they got locked into their platform because they'd built so many fabs, so many giant fabs. And then it turned out their platform couldn't deliver. First with Itanium, the new IA64 platform, which they abandoned, and then finally they couldn't get down to the 10-nanometer process. Meanwhile, Apple's new chips are 5 nanometers.
I mean, hard to argue there, and especially because Apple has really pushed the envelope in terms of what they're doing with their silicon on the iOS side, that, you know, I think that they were always frustrated in Cupertino for dealing with the fact that they had to be locked into Intel's schedule, right? And like Intel would come out with new chips on their very specific roadmap, and Apple always felt a little bit like it was straining at the bit there and trying to push their computers faster forward. And the problem was that they just couldn't, you know, they had to wait for Intel, and being bound to any other company for Apple, especially for something that's that important, I think it drives them crazy inside. And like, I think that's a long-standing philosophy coming from those days when they were really teetering on the edge of, you know, bankruptcy and being, you know, essentially dissolved as a company, was the fact that they had to be beholden to some other company in order to produce their devices. So I think they've kind of, if you look at their trend line over the last 20 years, it's all about bringing more and more stuff in-house and doing more and more stuff you know, designing, building everything from the ground up as much as possible under their own control, because frankly, they're control freaks.
Right. None of you are old enough to remember, but I remember very well the same exact problem, the same tensions between Intel and Microsoft. I remember interviewing Andy Grove 20 some years ago, the CEO at the time of Intel, who was just bitching and moaning about Bill Gates and Microsoft, saying, you know, here we are, we're making these 32-bit chips and these stupid Windows is still 16-bit. There is something to be said. I mean, there's pluses and minuses, but there is something to be said for making both the hardware and the software. That's what Steve Jobs always said. Actually, it goes back to Alan Kay, who said, you know, you really want to make a great computer, you need to make both. Yeah. You have to own both sides of the equation. Unfortunately, or fortunately for Intel anyway, Microsoft couldn't break up with Intel. Microsoft wasn't in a position to say, okay, all you PC makers, stop using Intel. They didn't make the hardware. Yeah. They just made the operating system. Mm-hmm. So there was this natural tension that never did get resolved. And now, you know, it's maybe too late for Intel.
Well, glad you bring it up now, because it almost seems like a Microsoft and Intel combo would be really interesting down the line. But to what you guys are saying, do you guys remember, yeah, where were you when the Intel switch was announced for Apple? Because I was working in IT and I just looked at that as like, oh my God, everything I just have built and supported is not going to work anymore. So I'm really worried for IT people right now, because it's not even just, you know, x86 to x86. It's a completely different switch. It's
everything's
to
different.
ARM.
Yeah.
Everything's
that was
different.
Literally the beginning of my tech journalism career was in 2006. So it was literally at the moment that transition happened. I was just starting out writing for the Mac user blog at Macworld. And I think it's a big deal. But I think what Apple has proved is that over the time, they have done more transitions than anybody in computing, right? They have not only gone from, you know, they used to run on Motorola chips in the classic days, they went to PowerPC, then we had the software transition going from the classic Mac OS to Mac OS 10, and now they're transitioning, you know, they were transitioning to Intel, now they're transitioning to their own silicon chips. Like, if anybody has got this down to sort of a science, it's definitely Apple. And so, yeah, there's going to be impacts for sure. I think the biggest question that everybody's waiting to hear is whether or not Apple's going to decide to do something about virtualization. So running Windows on your Mac, for example, right? That was a huge sell of switching to the Intel processors, was like, you can boot into Windows, you can run virtualization and virtualize Windows. How is that going to work on an Apple Silicon processor? I mean, like, what kind of emulation is going to have to happen there, if any? Is it going to be feasible at all? Are they going to be able to run, you know, maybe the ARM variant of Windows? There's some licensing issues at play there, as I understand it. So a lot of questions there for people who depend on that as like critical workflow.
Yeah. Also makes me worried about games, because Mac has never been a great platform for games, and now it's Good luck. Good luck
but
in
now,
getting a whole new build of something. Yeah.
iOS apps run natively now, and iOS is a great platform for games. So it's kind of a weird situation for them to be in. I know. I agree.
It's constantly frustrating as a longtime Mac user. I wish that I could be able to play any games on this device, but no, I must stick to my Switch or a PC if I want to use Steam.
Apple's so hostile to AAA gaming that they basically kicked the most profitable game of our generation off, Fortnite.
Who needs them?
They really act like,
whatever.
Yeah, but they have Apple Arcade, a $5 a month subscription, all you can eat, 100 games. They're all kind of casual games, but maybe Apple says
some of them are pretty good. Like, I'll say this about Apple Arcade, and I wrote this up at Engadget. Like, it is sort of an antidote to where mobile gaming is now, right? Because Apple Arcade,
they had to do it for that reason.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. There's no in-app purchases. It's all like, it's pretty much all you can eat. But some are really complex, deep narrative games. So it's not just like the casual stuff. There's a lot of cool stuff in there.
Apple's history with gaming is so weird. I think fundamentally, I would argue they've never gotten gaming in the way that they have.
For a while,
things.
They were going to make a gaming platform. They're going to make the Pippin. Mm-hmm. Remember the Pippin?
Yeah. Do you remember when Halo was going to debut on the Mac back in 2000 and Steve Jobs announced it at a keynote?
That's because Bungie did Marathon, which was the last great Mac-only game. And that's 20 years ago. Paris, what games would you play if you could play on a Mac?
God, if I could play on a Mac, I'm interested in a lot of, I guess, like, I end up just playing most games that I can play on my Switch because it's the only console that I currently have. As of late, I've been playing, I've been playing Fire Emblem. I'm playing a Final Fantasy VII remake. I have been playing, just trying to fill my brain with as much retro content as possible.
It's soothing, isn't it?
Given current events.
Yes, very soothing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have a shameful admission to make. I was all excited about buying the Xbox Series X or a PlayStation 5. Then I noticed the Switch was available again because you couldn't get it for a while during quarantine. Mm-hmm. So I bought a Switch and I thought, oh, because I wanted to play Hades. But I thought, well, I should try Animal Crossing.
Oh, are you deep in Animal Crossing now?
I am so stuck on my island. I said, I don't need a Series X. I don't need a PlayStation 5. I have Animal Crossing. That is shameful.
I mean, no, Animal Crossing will get you. It was... Yeah. First, like 3 months of quarantine, that's all I did with my free time. Oh, it's good. Wonderful.
And
enjoy
you,
it while
you grew
you can.
Out of it.
Eventually, you do.
Because you do everything. Your island is perfect. Oh, thank God. Because I don't see
but
it.
It'll take a while. You just have to fully give in.
I'm
to
still
the
buying
slide.
Turnips and trying to maximize my stock portfolio. Oh, my God. And I'm saying, when is the turnip lady coming? It's Sunday. Where is she? And
you got to go to the sites that have all the like ratios it's crazy. It's really
from playing
you can exchange turnips on like the black stock market.
Oh yeah.
Some random people online.
Oh, it's crazy. and there's scammers. There's turnips scammers.
Oh yeah.
Of course.
What a world.
It's a crazy thing. Having played Pokemon Go when it came out, I saw how nuts people went, and there were all those sites, just like you said, Dan, where they figured everything out, and you need this to do this and this. And Animal Crossing, it's the same. I was talking to Laurie Gill. She said, oh, you need this app, and here's the site. And you can track the stock prices and figure out when to sell your turnips. I feel very fortunate. I sold them on Wednesday. By Friday, the market had crashed. So I got out.
Get out of turnips. Get
I'm
all
so
into,
sorry.
You gotta
dump
play
your
Return of the Obra Dinn next, Leo.
Okay.
That's a favorite game that I played. It's on Switch.
It's so good.
That probably would have been my answer up until it came to Switch for a game that I'd wanted to play on Mac but couldn't. It is technically an insurance adventure with minimal colors at 1802,
so
but it's much more interesting than that sounds.
It looks and feels like a classic Mac game from like the 80s, basically. And I ended up playing on my Xbox for the same reason as Paris. I can't play it on my Mac, so I had to get it for a different platform.
Oh, my God, it does. It looks like...
It's beautiful.
It's
so clever, too.
It looks like Castlevania or something. Oh, my God, look at that. Return of the Obra Dinn. So this is a ship, and you're supposed to,
You're an insurance adjuster. This ship came to shore with nobody on it. You represent the insurance company for the ship who's supposed to figure out whether or not they can make a claim. And you're given this pocket watch, you'll see right there, that lets you go back to the time of death.
Oh, my God.
For every body you see. So then you go and you have to kind of jump from death to death and figure out what happened on this ship.
Oh.
And it's a mystery game. And so essentially... you have to try and figure out like who all these people are, how they died, and you have to get the names and causes of death right in groups of three to advance, and then you learn more about the story. It's fantastic.
So the good thing about this game is it has an end, right? You get to the
yes.
And I guess Animal Crossing has an end, unless you decide you want to continue the turnip thing.
Animal Crossing, you can play forever.
Oh, God.
Yeah. It is infinite.
Oh, God.
Or you step away from Animal Crossing. When you go back, there's just weeds everywhere, so you have to do all the work
again. And cockroaches.
To clean it up.
And cockroaches.
Yeah.
If you leave
like
your house, the house fills with weeds and cockroaches.
That's not a game. That's just life.
Much of the game is involved with picking up weeds, shaking trees to find things. It's work.
catching lice on your
catching lice on your neighbor. Fleas,
I couldn't do it. My wife played it for quite a long time, and I played it for a few weeks, and then was like, "This feels too much like work. I'm going to go back to doing something else."
But it is a good thing to watch when you're waiting for election returns to come in. I'm excited about the Apple thing. There really isn't much to say till we see on Tuesday. Although, there were some leaked Geekbench results. Ooh. Yeah, and this happens from time to time, right? Where, and I don't know, maybe you guys have a better idea, where either it's somebody who has the new Apple MacBook accidentally, because when you do a Geekbench benchmark, mm-hmm. if you're not careful, it can upload it to the public site where everybody can see the numbers. It could be that somebody did that by accident. It could be Apple leaked it on purpose. It could be completely faked.
Yeah.
But it's impressive as hell. It's for an A14X. We would expect, in fact, the A14, which is the current chip in the iPad Air and the new iPhones, would have a special desktop variant. It clocks at 1.8 gigahertz. Can turbo boost to 3.1 gigahertz, which would mean it's the first time ever any Apple silicon gets over 3. 8 cores. That's about what you'd expect, too. They've got 6 cores in the iPhone 12. This one had 8 gigs of RAM, although, you know, I'm sorry, the GPU had 8 gigs of RAM. So this sounds like, this sounds like a pretty heavy-duty machine. And it outscored the i9 Intel Apple MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
Both in single core and multi-core performance. What do you, I mean, Dan, maybe you have some experience with this. Could this be fake?
It could be fake. It's impossible to know, but it could very well be real. Like you said, it kind of pegs in where we would expect it to be. The A14X would be expected because that would probably be the same chip that would end up in any new iPad Pro as well. Usually the X variant is what you see in the iPads after they debut the sort of standard variant in the iPhones. So a lot of people speculating that, you know, what we see in an iPad Pro might also show up in a laptop. And as you said, it kind of outpaces basically every Mac laptop on the market right now, which is not a bad place to be. And we don't even know, you know, what configuration, what variant is that, right? Like if they're talking about both a MacBook Air and a MacBook Pro, is this the Pro version? Is it the Air version? You know, what is going to be the functional difference between these things? So
we'll be watching.
Yeah, there's a lot of possibility here, but it, you know, certainly exciting to look at something and be like, well, if even the base level is going to be faster than everything on the market right now, what does the high end look like?
Right. Well, definitely on your bingo cards, you should have the phrase all day battery life, right? Because that's what you get with these kinds of chips is much better power, much better power curve, and perhaps maybe 30% improvement in performance. That's the kind of number Apple likes. They don't like doing benchmarks. They don't like giving you benchmark numbers, but they like saying things like 30% better performance.
I think the last thing they had said, like when they were talking benches, was like their chips are twice as fast as the most popular Windows laptop, right? I think that's what it was for when they were talking about the new iPad. Right. So, you know, and then we don't know. Like the thing about Apple's, even once we get the actual specs from them, we won't have the actual
stats
or numbers.
Yeah, someone will have to break it down.
We'll have to wait till we get them. Mm-hmm. Somebody will, you know, the one thing I do remember, because I have bought several now of the i9 MacBook Pros, was when it first came out, the YouTuber who benchmarked it in the freezer, because the thermals were so terrible on the thing that you could, as soon as it got fast, it could only be very bursty, you know, quick, because as soon as it got fast, it would heat up so much they had to say, oh, no, slow down. So
keep in mind that none of the existing, you know, A series devices have active cooling in them, right? You know, phones, iPads, mm-hmm. Apple TV, there's no active cooling systems in those things. There's no fans. So if you can put an active cooling system in on top of it, I mean, think about what additional performance that lets you sort of eke out of it. If it's like, well, now that we can actually cool this chip down and it's not threatening to burn the entire laptop to the ground, we can eke so much more performance out of it.
That's what's going to be very
as a person who constantly has probably 100 or more Google Chrome tabs open at once, I truly wish that there was any cooling because my laptop constantly sounds like it's about to take off into outer space.
Yeah. When your laptop spins up, the fans spin up because you're installing software, then you know it's time to get a better laptop. And a lot of the modern Windows 10 laptops, the fans are on at high volume a lot of the time. And I think that's an Intel flaw. That's why mm-hmm. I think this is going to be very interesting. And I can guarantee you everybody's looking on the PC side, looking at this with interest, not that they'll be able to get Apple Silicon, but at least maybe this can stimulate ARM chip development mm-hmm. For Windows.
Yeah. Yeah. Microsoft. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a fanless laptops out of this, by the way, just because yeah. of yeah, the history of these processors. So we've seen like a couple. I think the last time I saw it was like Dell's XPS 13 2-in-1 from like 2 years ago was at least very, very quiet. And like it had a weird cooling system. So I guess we'll see. It was super underpowered because if it's fanless on Intel, you're running Y series probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And it's just slow as hell. So yeah.
I'm going to just guess. We'll see. It's not like we need to speculate. It's only 2 days away. But I'm going to guess they'll do a fanless MacBook. Very thin, very light, all-day battery life. Mm-hmm. It's going to be better performance than the current MacBook or MacBook Air because they don't have to use those crappy Y-series Intel chips. But it won't be super good. And then I think we will maybe, and it might not even be for delivery this year, see a higher end. And I'm sure that that's where these Geekbench scores come from, a higher end. MacBook Pro 16, that will be the one that pros will want, obviously.
The Bloomberg story that came out last week from Mark Gurman, I think, suggested that we'd see a 13-inch Air, a 13-inch Pro, and a 16-inch Pro all announced on Tuesday, all of which will probably be in sort of the same form factor as the existing laptops.
That's a disappointment.
Sort of,
I was hoping
they'd
be in color or something just to distinguish
them. You don't know. I mean, there's always details and you never know what they get right and what they get wrong. But it is interesting to just see, like, is this a situation where we try to keep things looking as similar as possible so we don't scare off any of our customers worried that this is a whole new product?
So we're going to take a break. As you know, there was an election. There will be there's a new president and vice president elect January 20th. Maybe they'll take office. I don't know what's going to happen between now and then. But if they do, yeah, of course. It's America. What could go wrong? But when they do take office, when a Biden-Harris administration takes office, how will they approach big tech? That's the question everybody's asking. And what will become of the DOJ's lawsuit against Google and so forth? Jessica Lesson has a good article in The Information, your publication, Paris. But we will talk about that. What do the election results mean for big tech when we get back? Actually, we should probably include in that Prop 22 in California, which enfranchised Uber and Lyft and said, nah, don't worry. Those guys don't have to be employees. So this will be very, very interesting. Coming to you from the beautiful Four Seasons Landscaping Company in downtown Petaluma. It's this week.
I will be thinking of that for the rest of my life.
That is just a perfect coda to the whole last 4 years. Rudy Giuliani
standing in a parking lot, like feet away from a sex shop, giving an announcement at the end of Donald Trump's.
Unbelievable.
Incredible.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Our show today brought to you by IT Pro TV. You know, nowadays, I think that getting a job in IT is probably as good as it can get. You know, it's job security for one thing. And there's so many different areas you can choose from that could fit your interest. Obviously, if you watch our shows, you're interested in technology. If you've been tasked to learn something new for IT, whether for work or just for yourself, I think a lot of people say, oh, I'll just go to YouTube or maybe I'll sign up with a technical college or go to the bookstore. No, nobody thinks that and get some books. The problem with that is it's not the best way to learn. What are the best videos? What are the best books? How much do you have to waste on a technical school? You need to go to IT Pro TV. There will be no waste of time or money. It's the best online education platform, both engaging and informative and entertaining. So it's painless, but you will learn. And man, for every kind of IT job, whether it's developer, help desk or support, network admin, business professional, sysadmin, security, networking, you'll find exactly what you need to learn with IT Pro TV. They make it fun. And I think if it's a little bit fun, it's also a little easier to learn, but it's not too fun. It's to the point, too. It doesn't waste your time. And you can get your IT certs through IT Pro TV's online IT training courses. You'll get great new skills. You'll learn it with the best top-rated IT training videos. They're engaging. They make it interesting. And man, do they have a lot of training. 5,800 hours of on-demand IT training covering 375 combined certifications. This is the most varied and highest quality anywhere. If you're managing an IT team, they have a great team portal. Professional training in every area. They're the official video training partner for CompTIA. So if you're looking for A+ or Network Plus or Security Plus, they've got those videos. They also provide Microsoft IT training, Cisco, Linux, Apple, security, cloud, and more. They do a great podcast. Actually, that's free to listen to. Technado with Don Pezet. It's got industry guests, IT news recaps. Don's a great guy. He's one of the founders of IT Pro TV. They're also focusing now on Cert Nexus certifications for November. Learn more about getting certified as a CyberSec first responder. Wow. Or a cybersecure coder. Or, I love this. This is the cert I want. I'm a certified Internet of Things practitioner. There is such a cert. And wouldn't that be a good thing to have? There should be no question. IT Pro TV is the first and last place you need to go for IT training. Professional IT education done right. Go to itpro.tv/twit. Use the code TWIT30. You'll get 30% off your consumer subscription for as long as you stay active. There's Don. itpro.tv/twit. The code again, TWIT30 for 30% off as long as you stay active. IT Pro TV. Build or expand your IT career and enjoy the journey. And who knows? Soon you could be a senior editor in Engadget. Just... get that IT job. That's how you start. itpro.tv/twit. You liked being an IT guy, right, Devendra? It was fun.
Oh, I did. It's great. It's you're always learning. It's simple, like, things to solve compared to, in a way, yes. Journalism feels like being in college forever, right? Because I basically spent the last week just writing nonstop like a crazy person. So, you know, it was nice to have simple problems to solve back in the day.
I came out of IT too, and I really I enjoyed so much being like, oh, I fixed your problem. Yeah. Goodbye.
You go home and you're done. Yeah. Nice work. On the other hand, this is a job that never ends.
I kind of love it too.
I like, you know, I always thought I was kind of, I got to be a ringside seat on the things that are changing the world. And that always, for me, was really the reason to be a tech journalist. You're watching stuff. It's fun. Nobody dies. Nobody bleeds. So it's a little... Well, not so much. Not so bad.
Yeah. Depends how you do it. We are watching the destruction of democracy in real time.
Not as many people die. Democracy might crumble due to a couple of platforms, the consolidation of market power constantly. Yeah. You know.
Let's talk about that. Biden's already tweeting. I think the Twitter is now kind of the de facto communication platform for presidents. You think? Has Donald Trump changed that? I know that.
I'm not sure that that's going to go far beyond the Trump administration. I mean, I think that the Biden administration will probably use Twitter much in the same way that past non-Trump administrations have, as a social media channel rather than a extension of the president's thoughts.
I think we'll hopefully see some press conferences. Yeah.
Well, I hope so too.
But press conferences. Wow.
But the at POTUS Twitter handle, which was created for Barack Obama, passed to President Trump, will pass on to President Biden. So he will have that as an option. But I don't think Obama used it that much. But those were different.
It was his
times.
Team. He had a great social media team.
He did.
You know, so yeah.
Mm-hmm. And who knows? Maybe Biden will be TikTok. You know.
The first TikTok president. There's always time.
I think Kamala could be, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
So in a more serious vein, there is a lot of investigation going into big tech. There's the Department of Justice's lawsuit against Google. There's the House's, the Antitrust Subcommittee of the Judiciary Committee's 450-page document. There's a lot of interest in what we can do about big tech. How much of that transitions from the Trump administration to a Biden administration? What do you think, Paris?
I think quite a lot of it. I mean, I think we're definitely it seems like the Department of Justice's investigation into Google is probably going to continue into the Biden administration, if not be furthered. It seems like it's more likely that like Democratic state attorneys general would join that lawsuit, maybe even like add allegations about Google.
Yeah, so right as of now, it was really a political. It looked like a political prosecution of Google. Mm-hmm. It was Republican governor or Republican AGs rather joining it, not Democrat. And it really was as formed, it was something William Barr pushed through. In fact, we're hearing reporting that a lot of the staff attorneys at the Department of Justice said, it's too soon. It's too soon. We don't have a case built yet. And Barr said, no, we got to do it before Election Day. So I mean, it's somewhat political, but you think, I mean, it's been very clear. Biden has in his many statements during the election said, you know, we need to pursue this. Elizabeth Warren, another Democratic candidate who perhaps will have a role to play. She's certainly going to have a role played in the Senate, was actively campaigning for the breakup of big tech. So you think that in fact, Biden even said, I think we should look at Section 230 of the DMCA. We should get rid of that. I've been told Jeff Jarvis says he knows of advisors who've spoken to him about that and said,
please, no, please.
Maybe yeah. That's not what you want to pursue. So maybe his position will change. You don't think it'll be a big change, though, from now till in January 20th?
I think that, I mean, we're certainly going to see a change in tone. It depends on honestly whether or not the what happens with the Senate, because I know that Democrats were interested in possibly tackling antitrust laws and doing reforms so that maybe they could stop Facebook and Google and other companies from acquiring smaller startups and whatnot, and perhaps pursuing antitrust charges or building a defense based on things like that. But I think it, I mean, certainly I'd hope that some of the inflammatory policymaking or executive orders we've seen kind of around 230 and the rhetoric around that might cool down a bit in a new administration. hopefully once somebody explains to whoever her president is what Section 230 actually is and what it means and what it does not.
Well, yeah, I would agree with that. I do... Jessica Lesson, writing in The Information, says that it's expected the FTC will decide whether to sue Facebook soon, could even be as soon as this month under a Trump administration.
And we've been waiting on antitrust action in Europe on Amazon for a couple months now.
And that certainly is not going to change. That's not affected by the U.S. presidential elections. I think it's a big unknown. I don't know if we know what Biden-Harris administration will do about big tech. Do we, Devin?
I don't think they have the same. Sorry, go ahead, Devin.
Well, just quickly, like I at the very least, we won't just have hearings where they invite all the leaders and just yell at them like children, which to me was the single most embarrassing. Like a lot of embarrassing things happened over the past 4 years, but that was just, it was so pathetic. It was so childish, where there are a lot of big problems to solve. I think Elizabeth Warren has some great ideas. Like, yeah, deconstructing the monopolies is really what we should be talking about. So I hope she pursues that, because we've seen time and again, like Facebook, even with this election, has been slow to fix a lot of the problems from 2016. So, yeah, there's a lot more they can do.
Dan, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just thinking, I mean, along the lines of what Devinder was saying, I think that it's clear the concerns that Democrats have with big tech are very different from the concerns that Republicans have with big tech. So with the DOJ investigation going forward, it sure seems like it might be refocused, if anything. I kind of agree with Paris. I don't think it's going to go anywhere, but perhaps if it gets more time to sort of mature and then they're spinning up a different DOJ apparatus, it's possible that we'll see stuff that's more focused on the issues that Democrats are concerned about, and which I think are probably the issues you should be concerned about, like Devinder was just saying, not why does Google not like me?
I imagine there was a little celebration in Tencent company headquarters. TikTok and WeChat might survive the Trump administration. A judge actually, TikTok was supposed to be shut down in 4 days. Judge Beadlestone said, no, You don't have any reason to do that. So that's been stopped by the courts, at least temporarily. I can't imagine a Biden administration would continue to pursue that. That seems so politically motivated.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, our relationship with China, that's a big part of tech, too. You know, Apple's phone sales in China dropped precipitously last quarter. And it's thought that that's had something to do with the anti-China sentiment, the tariffs that the Trump administration leveled against China. Chinese phone buyers suddenly got patriotic and bought a lot of Huawei phones, making them the number one phone manufacturer in the world. That might change. I don't know in what way or how.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, Apple is also, they've been in kind of a bind there for a while, because not only is China a huge market for them, but China is the source of the vast majority of their manufacturing and labor. And so Apple has been slowly, you know, as we saw starting in early this year when the coronavirus really started in China, you know, been trying to diversify and move their assets around so they can manufacture in other places, including India and Vietnam and elsewhere. Of course, for the pandemic, it ends up, turns out that that's everywhere. So that didn't really help them. But I mean, certainly the relationship with China is part of that, where trying to not have all their eggs in one basket and be in a situation where they're not solely dependent on, if the Chinese-US relationship goes south, it's not like we can't not only sell into that market, but we can't get our phones produced and sold to other markets either. So I agree that it's a huge area of interest for Apple, is how well the U.S.-China relationship sort of stands up and whether the Biden presidency will improve that.
Do you remember the Trump administration? It was only 4 years, but it seems like it was very, very long. It was only
it was 4 decades.
It was a decade.
Do you remember, though, he had a tech and science council that mm-hmm. featured CEOs from technology?
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? Mm-hmm. You know, Tim Cook and Mark Zuckerberg.
You mean
others.
Tim Apple.
Yeah, Tim Apple, yeah.
And they went to D.C. and they I mean, that's prudent if you're a CEO of a big tech firm or any firm, to make nice with the president. But that was like years ago.
The photos from that meeting, I think, are hilarious too, because it was like Tim Cook and just like, what the hell are we doing here, guys? Look at this idiot. Like, why am I doing this? It's because of my, it's because of my stockholders. I have to sit here and take this. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Obama had a similar council. Eric Schmidt was on that. Craig Mundy of Microsoft was on it. It wasn't a bunch of CEOs. I'm actually very curious, A, what happened to that, and B, what a Biden administration will, what its relationship will be. You know, those CEOs are going to pay obeisance to the new president. Of course, they'll make the trip to D.C. and have lunch in the residence if they can, and that kind of thing. I just wonder what it's going to look like. I don't mm-hmm. think it'll be a, you know, it's hard to say, but it doesn't feel like it'll be a tense relationship. This is the difficulty. You might say, if you're a conservative, oh, they're censoring our speech. You might say, if you're a Democrat, oh, they're too big. But there's also this issue that they seem to be powering the American economy, especially now during quarantine. You want to be a little careful. You don't want to chop them up and destroy what may be the only big economic powerhouse during quarantine there is.
Well, it's
and we should point out there are bigger issues that Biden's going to have to solve.
I think that's the main thing. It won't be number one on his list.
Yeah,
tech will be perfectly fine, because we literally have to rebuild the country, fill out the State Department, like fix this entire mess. So, yeah. Tech will probably be good for a little while.
He will have to name a new FCC, or will likely name a new FCC commissioner. The way it works, the White House, there's two Republicans and two Democrats on the FCC. And then I guess the White House gets to choose the chairman of mm-hmm. the FCC. I imagine Ajit Pai is sending out his resume at this point. Probably get a nice cush job lobbying for Verizon or one of the big telcos. He's been good to them.
Who knows?
What about net neutrality?
Mm-hmm.
What about net neutrality?
We're done. Come on.
We didn't solve that already. That wasn't we didn't fix that
again.
One.
I don't see that being a high priority. And yet, you know, these are the concerns we have as tech people.
Won't it be an interesting time for 4 years or so to not have tech-related issues be the number one news?
I remember when we didn't have to talk about politics at all on these shows. But now it's kind of a big part of the overall
story. Yeah, like tech wanted to rule the world, and now tech is ruling the world, and that is
political.
Now
it's like, whoa, why is everyone so concerned with us?
Don't worry.
We're just doing what we told you we were going to do.
We got this. All right. So I guess we'll watch with interest to see.
I hope Warren gets a good role as somebody overseeing antitrust and everything. Because it's not just tech, but it is certainly a lot of tech.
She's my sitting senator, so I feel very strongly that she's sticking around.
Considered because isn't the governor of her state a Republican? She was removed. Baker would cost them the majority in the Senate.
That's a good point.
Yeah, Charlie Baker is a Republican, even though he's a very liberal Republican. And that would be too much of a risk. Plus, her position in the Senate, I think, is pretty vital to a lot of what's
it's
going
also
on.
So, yeah.
Meg Whitman might join Biden's cabinet.
Yeah. We need more short-form videos.
Quick bites, you know.
It was actually a quick such bite a of the company. Yes, yeah.
What about Quibi? It's over, right? Did they shut down yet, or can you still watch Dismantled and the girl with the golden arm?
Yeah.
Never forget.
We'll make fun of the golden arm thing because it was Sam Raimi being campy. But when you take something like that out of context, it just really feeds the idea that Quibi is this complete disaster. So
did you enjoy it?
It's fine. I mean, it's fine. I love Sam Raimi. I give Sam Raimi campy.
I love him too. Yep.
Yeah.
And he played it for camp. If you saw it, it was obviously not serious. What did she have? We talked about it a couple of weeks ago. Pulmonary disease, or you have to take off the arm. Never
bury me with my golden arm. I will say my favorite thing about Quibi is that it crashed and burned just in time to make my Halloween costume relevant, which I was a ghost of Quibi.
So oh, I love it.
It was originally supposed to be the ghost of the idea of Quibi, but then it was just the real ghost of Quibi.
How did you identify yourself as Quibi? Did you look the same sideways and upright?
I almost have it here. So I had, the ghost sheet costume, and then I had the Quibi logo.
Perfect.
Right in the front.
The ghost of I am the ghost of Quibi past. Politico says Meg Whitman would be a candidate for commerce. And I would be surprised to see Joe Biden look at some Republicans.
After
some
her positions. String of successes, let's bring her in. Let's really just, Meg Whitman.
Yeah. I don't know who's putting her on the list. Probably Meg Whitman. She's looking for work.
I will never forget sitting across the table from Meg Whitman and Jeffrey Katzenberg and be like, guys, nobody wants this. Nobody wants to pay for this.
No, you told them that?
Well, basically, I'm like, between Netflix and YouTube and everything people has, why would anybody want this? Yeah.
And what did they say?
We are convinced. We're convinced we can create like a third option for consumers.
A new category.
Yeah. I have a quote. Yeah. Adding gadget,
that's Amazon.
It's insane.
That's any number of services before Quibi was a third option for services. Quibi is like the 17th option.
Yeah.
I think there is an axiom in there. We'll have to make it Hard of War's axiom. but it's something like if you have to create a new category for your product, you have zero chance of success.
Probably.
Right?
Probably. I mean, It's hard to predict when things will go viral and will be really successful. But I mean, even you look at TikTok, right? TikTok, I feel, is the bones of Vine. And you knew that there was something there. You just needed the investment to make it successful.
Yeah.
So that wasn't super surprising down the line. Maybe Snapchat was a little more surprising, but it's hard to tell.
Maybe iPad was a new category that hadn't really, and Apple was trying to find something in between a phone and a computer. And it took it 10 years to kind of,
Solidified. It took a while.
Yeah.
And it's not like tablets weren't a thing before
True.
But it was a combination of factors that made it so successful. But Devinder's right. Like finding out that one, like what's going to make something popular? I mean, that's true in almost anything, movies, books, TV series, right? Tech, like what makes this thing catch on in a viral way or become something more than just the sum of its parts? And the answer is you can't predict it. You can do all the research in the world, but you can't ever know for sure that your thing's going to catch on.
Well, that's the hubris of Hollywood, isn't it?
Yes, you know, sure. Absolutely.
They said, oh, no, we know how to make things viral.
And venture capital.
Yeah. And VC.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, oh, put those two together. That's a match made in heaven.
Hold my beer while I make this viral. But nobody knows how to make anything viral. Everybody, you know, claims
if we
to.
We did. We would just do it all the time, right?
Like we would do it. It's a mystery why something catches. Why did the guy on the longboard with the cranberry singing Fleetwood Mac? How did that become a hit?
Because he was the vibe of our times. Okay, we were
that's
all
true.
That guy.
He's an icon, yeah. And we are all still
icon.
In that mental state. He got a truck. We're all happy
viral.
For him.
Mm-hmm. No, this guy was his truck broke down, and he had a longboard in the back, and he said, "I'll make a video of me vibing to Fleetwood Mac as I skate down." And now, you know, it's now, by the way, I saw this on Monday Night Football, or maybe on Sunday Night. It's a nationwide TikTok ad, and they have him doing it.
Yeah.
And then a bunch of other people doing
and
it.
And Mick Fleetwood and a bunch of other people. And then finally Stevie Nicks shows up. And it's like, who would have?
That's when you know it's done, by the
if
way.
You
like
pitched,
when the actual thing.
If you pitched this, if you went into Hollywood and said, look, I got this great idea. Guy. In a truck. Truck breaks down. He gets on his longboard, drinks some cranberry juice, and sings Fleetwood Mac. It's going to be huge. They would have laughed you out of the office.
Leo,
that's the problem.
If I knew how to make stuff viral, I've written three books. If I knew how to make stuff viral, I would have sold a lot
three,
more, let me tell you.
Three? I've done more than a dozen. They were all flops.
That's so weird. I was reading, somebody did a retrospective of the dancing baby from Ally McBeal.
Perfect example.
And like late 90s viral, the thing that became a hit everywhere. I still don't understand it, but it was a weird confluence of
Ooga
a bunch
chukka,
of things.
Ooga chukka.
Yeah.
That was, I'm sure you know this, but that was a 3D model that came with some big 3D program at the time, right?
That wasn't a real baby?
They make an HD version of that. There's an HD version of the baby now you can put onto things. So enjoy.
Thank God.
Thanks, Snapchat. That was back in 1998, the dancing baby.
Mm-hmm.
We've gone from dancing baby
simpler
to baby
times.
Era.
Simpler times. Yeah. Although the creator, David E. Kelly, is still around. If anybody knows how to create viral, I guess it's him.
He's got a good formula for rich people shows, basically. Yeah.
Have you been watching The Undoing?
No.
It's good.
I try. It's really...
I consider my life The Undoing. You know?
Yeah.
Little too close to home.
You can't do that to us right now. A rich, you know, rich family in Manhattan living their rich life, whereas Succession is right there and is a perfect show.
Yeah.
So I can't... I only have room for one of those in my life right now.
Yeah. Oh, here it is. I found it. This is on the AV Club, the Dancing Baby. Look how low res this was. 1998, we thought this was, like, that was great.
All right. So AV Club represent. That's
somebody
my shirt.
Somebody rediscovered the model, re-rendered it, and ported it to Gmod.
Oh, dear.
This is, much better.
Still horrifying.
Agreed.
There are kids alive, adults alive today.
Yeah.
Who weren't born and don't know what the hell we're talking about.
You want to feel old? That baby is 35 now.
Yes.
That baby
you're right.
Vote. Yeah.
Yeah, that baby can vote.
Oh, that baby can vote. That baby can vote.
And please vote for the Senate runoff.
Yeah. Ooga chukka, baby. Let's take a little break. I'm kind of punchy. I don't know about you guys. I'm a little punchy. This was a long, difficult.
This is our collective exhale as a as a country. So this is the tail end of that.
I have not quite literally, but very close to certainly figuratively been holding my breath for 4 freaking years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm still, and by the way, 73 days still to go.
Yeah, right.
Just got power through.
Yes.
It's not too late to start a nuclear war. Just remember that. Good golly, Miss Molly. Great panel today. It's great to see Paris Martineau now working at the information.
Thinking about nuclear war.
I'm sorry I brought that up. That was bad.
Not too soon, Leo. Yeah.
Too soon. What do you cover? What's your beat over there?
I cover Amazon.
Oh, so you're still doing that?
Yeah, doing it. There's a lot of Amazon out there, shockingly.
I want to talk Amazon when we get back. Because, you know, Black Friday is coming.
It's true. Black Friday actually began in October, according to Amazon.
It did.
They changed Black Friday in July to Black Friday in October.
Black Quarter. Mm-hmm. Also with us from Engadget, Devendra Hardawar. You've been on this show now. You must be in your second decade now on this show. You've been here with us.
Oh, man. I wish. I remember when I was doing IT, Leo, listening to you with the original Twitch show, you know, back in the day. It was like 2005, 2006.
So it does feel like
I've been here for two decades.
This is the original Twitch show. This is not a sequel.
Well, like the first batch of episodes, because I grew up also watching you on Tech TV and everything. So nice. To see it come back, that was pretty cool.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. God, I feel old now. And also with us, Dan Morin, of course, host at sixcolors.com, host of Clockwise. And I loved the Jason's charts. They did it again. The color charts for the Apple Quarter
was very good with those charts.
He really takes the six color stuff to heart. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. He lives it.
Yep. Our show today brought to you by Worldwide. Anyway, great to have all three of you. Brought to you by Worldwide Technology. This was I have a soft spot in my heart for them because it was the last trip I ever took. Well, It was 8 months ago in March. I went out, Lisa and I flew out to St. Louis to visit WWT and their Advanced Technology Center. Even when we were going out there in early March, I was holding my breath thinking, I hope I make it. But fortunately, St. Louis was still pretty clear, so we were able to go there. We had a meetup. We hung out with people. I did, you know, a little bit of elbow bumping instead of handshaking, but that's about it. I did get to see the Advanced Technology Center, though, and I'm forever grateful. They've been building that for 10 years. There's now $500 million of equipment there from hundreds of OEMs. So what I should explain, WWT is a partner for enterprise technologies. They help you buy it. They help you configure it. They help you design it. They help you implement it. They help you support it. They have expertise in all the areas you need to make enterprise technology sing. And this ATC is so important. It's got everything in there, hundreds of OEMs and key partners, ranging from the heavyweights like Dell Technologies, VMware, Intel, to emerging disruptors like Equinix. And that's important because if you're looking at, you know, moving to the cloud, or you're looking at security, or looking at app development, you want to make sure that the tools you choose work with the tools you use, that you'll be able to make this transition. And that's what the engineers at WWT do with these labs. They spin up proofs of concept. They do demos. They do testing. And you can, too. I'll explain how you could do that in just a second. The ATC is an incubator for IT innovation. It offers on-demand and schedulable labs like Dell's VxRail, PowerStore, Unity, PowerMax, Data Protection Central, IDPA. These labs represent the newest advances in primary storage. And if you're looking at a Dell solution, you can go in there, you can test it, you can see how it works, you can integrate it with your existing stuff. There's white papers, there's benchmarks, there's everything you need, and hundreds of labs that you can explore every topic in enterprise. From multi-cloud hyper-converged infrastructure to networking and secondary storage, data analytics, AI, and more. That's what WWT's engineers do, and that's what you can do too, because they offer lab as a service, a dedicated space within the ATC where customers can perform their own programmatic testing. It's amazing. It's virtual too, so you can take full advantage of the ATC's benefits no matter where you are in the world at any time of the day or night. WWT's engineers work in these labs every day, beta testing new equipment, building reference architectures, and custom integrations to help their customers make decisions and see results faster with much less investment. No mystery. When you implement this stuff, you know it's going to work because you've tested it. WWT last summer launched this digital platform. It includes the entire ATC ecosystem. creates a multiplier effect of knowledge, speed, and agility anytime, anywhere around the world for all their customers and partners. Get full access to those hands-on labs, but also articles, case studies, and other tools that make the difference in today's fast-paced world. Learn more about what WWT can do for you. Become a member. Get to use the ATC. Get to read all this stuff. Go to WWT.com/twit. Create that account. No obligation. Gain access to their on-demand labs today. WWT is a real partner for your journey in technology. They simplify the complex. WWT.com/twit. Worldwide technology. Delivering business and technology outcomes around the world. And they're nice people, too. They're really a great company. Beloved there in St. Louis. Okay, got to put away the dancing baby. Was dancing the whole time, by the way, I was doing that ad. Ooka chucka.
Ooka Some chucka. Say it's still dancing, even then.
I've heard that. Wow, Apple and Sony, according to Bloomberg, Mark Gurman again, Apple and Sony both talked about buying Wondery, which is a podcast network, the producer of Dirty John and Dr. Death. This, when I read this to Lisa, we both went, oh, the asking price for Wondery, I don't know how many podcasts they have, probably fewer than we do, $300 to $400 million.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
Jeez.
I should get into
Why
podcasting.
Why doesn't Apple spend that money making its podcast app good? I say this as a person who uses Apple's podcast app religiously because
Why?
It's what I've done, yeah. But it needs to be so much better, and it has had these same issues for years.
Yeah. Gotta love it. Yeah, Apple spent 10 years ignoring podcasting, and now they're like, ah, oh, gotta... This podcasting thing, I think it's hot.
We gotta buy it.
Just
we
give
gotta
me
buy
the
it.
Option to sort my podcast episodes by like either most recent or not most recent.
You gotta,
or
you gotta
take
go
away
podcast,
the ones
Ferris.
That I've listened to.
Pocket yeah. Casts.
It's
ridiculous. Pocket Casts.
I spend 3 hours of, I know, but it shouldn't, Apple shouldn't be this
shouldn't,
bad. I guess I'll get
either.
Podcasts, yeah. But I spend 3 hours of every day scrolling back 70 podcast episodes.
Paris, you remember a little thing called iTunes?
I've heard of it.
You remember yes. how bad that got?
Truly, it haunts my dreams.
Yeah.
Haunts my waking nightmares.
Yeah. And then instead of fixing it, rewriting it, doing anything, they just chopped it up into chunks. Now it's podcasts, music. It's still just as bad. TV, just as bad.
But now it's three times as many places.
But
so
now
it's so much
yeah,
more bad that's
exactly.
spread out for you.
Exactly. So Spotify was also looking at buying Wondery. They bowed out. Maybe the price was too high. But Apple's got
They're
plenty of
money. They're spending
too
much money on Rogan, you know.
Wow. They've got wow. All their- was that a good buy or not?
Mm. For whom?
$100 million yeah. it was rumored they're going to pay yeah, Joe mean, Rogan over time.
It seems like he's going to be okay. I don't know if that was good investment of money for Spotify, but
well, they're
certainly yeah. seemed like a good deal for Rogan. You know,
yeah, I can't. I mean, happy for Joe, but they're facing some headwinds from their own employees who say, "What you know, this guy is not what doesn't represent what we want to represent." He just interviewed Alex Jones, who's mm-hmm. been banned, deplatformed from YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, everywhere, but Joe Rogan's given him a platform. I just read an article in The Atlantic. I think it was Zeynep Tufekci who said mm-hmm. that Joe Rogan could well be a candidate for president in 2024.
Oh, yeah. I would not discount anything crazy like that. And also, if you all feel crazy about everything happening right now, Zeynep's work at The Atlantic, and I think she started a newsletter, is fantastic. So
she
I highly
is
recommend
absolutely,
her.
Absolutely.
A visionary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's so good.
I have to say, I'm not thrilled with her most recent article because if she's a visionary, then we're in trouble. We're in deep trouble because she says basically, let me see if I can find it. Oh, America's next authoritarian will be much more competent.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy. But she was one of the first to write about masks. No, she's just a sociologist, but she's just brilliant. And she was the first to say, you know, this mask thing is ridiculous. We need to be wearing masks. Why is the Surgeon General of the United States saying don't wear masks? They don't work. They do work.
This is so dumb. Oh, yeah. Man. Because our early advice was like save the masks only for healthcare. And that was literally the worst thing we could be telling people right now.
Yeah. I mean, we needed it and we need it still. We need the PPE. Yep. But you could have made a home, as I did, make homemade masks that would have been effective. Yeah, she says, the next in 2024, look for Josh Hawley, Tom Cotton, or maybe Joe Rogan, she says, to run.
Oh, my God. And actually, that's just given the things and everything that power Trump. Like, actually, Joe Rogan makes a ton of sense for a lot of people.
He'd be so very popular.
Now I'm we've broken the seal on, like, celebrity president. I mean, I guess we did a long
Ronald
time ago.
That's Reagan, what they Ronald Reagan broke but still, that seal.
Even that, it felt different, right? Like, this feels like, you know, we've at least he'd been a governor.
Yeah, at least he'd been a governor. He'd done some public service.
Wasn't bankrupt and evading his taxes and,
Okay. That's a 4 years from now problem, but it is something to think about.
Most viewed all-time video on YouTube. You got any guesses?
Baby Shark.
You know!
Baby Shark, yeah. I know because I live it every day.
Oh, don't play it. You have little kids. You have little kids. Come on, everybody. Come on. It has 7 billion views. I thought... Run for cover, Paris.
Why would you do
run for cover? Run for cover. Here it comes. All right, I'll stop before the kids start.
I have multiple Baby Shark toys. Like, it is, it's an epidemic.
It's pretty catchy.
Sure. Yeah. They got a good beat.
It was Oppo Gangnam Style. That was the first to like cross a billion views, right? Let me just
remember back in the days.
Those are the good old days.
Innocence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me see how many views that has these days. Wait a minute. This is a cartoon version. Or is this it? Maybe this is it.
There are a couple of different Gangnam Style videos now.
Yeah. This has 3.8 billion. So it's doing okay. Yeah, I think this is it.
Oh, yeah, this is OG.
We should mix this. OG. That's funny. It is. It's 8 years old. 8 years old now.
Love it.
So, but in 8 years, it only has been able to garner 3 billion views. It's still pretty funny.
Literally the same exact time I bought my car. My car is as old as Gangnam Style. Still, that's good.
That's my car is my Gangnam Style car. Baby Shark. 7.1 billion views, and that's in only 4 years. But this is why this is more successful. Because how many times have your kids watched this, Devendra? I mean, probably a thousand times each.
Right? My daughter loves it. But also, it's like, it's not just the YouTube. It's an institution where there are a ton of toys, ton of official toys. There's a lot of different, there are Baby Shark live shows. Where they tour around and do, I don't even know what they do. I'm pretty sure there are. But
the song's
it
only
is,
2 minutes long.
You get a whole show out of that. It. Yeah.
The kids all just want to do the thing.
So it was a battle. I didn't realize this between that and Despacito, which had billions and billions of views.
Yeah, Devendra, how many times do your kids watch that one?
Actually quite a bit because my wife loves it, but there's also a Sesame Street rendition of Despacito, which is like Spanish for rubber ducky, which is very good. It's perfect.
I can see us entering Devendra's personal hell right now. Despacito and Baby Shark warring.
Throw Pitbull in there and that's my hell.
There is, I didn't realize this, a Wikipedia article list of most viewed YouTube videos that you can use to keep up to date on this. It has a section called the Billion View Club. It shows the top videos. Despacito, 7 billion.
Oh, Johnny, yes, Papa is up there. All right, I'm into that.
Johnny is a thing, yeah.
Johnny? Yeah. I don't know that one. Let's.
No,
That's from the.
Actually, go back. You need to click the link.
You know how to use. You know how to use
no,
this.
No. The 36.
36, there it is.
Click that.
Click this.
Oh, it's good, actually.
It's the best song for children. How do you, have kids, Paris?
Oh,
no.
No. I just remember when this
What
was
do you get high and
internet.
Watch this? What do you do?
I, at
it's
one
a good
point,
one to get high
looked,
to.
this was like really blowing up on the
trip.
Internet.
This
it's
is a bad
it's really
trip.
Bad. There was a version of this that was even more Uncanny Valley that took off online a couple years ago, and, it was
this
horrifying.
One's very slick compared to the early ones.
This is very slick. The one that I'm thinking of is terrifying looking.
Yeah, I think we're all just glad that the dancing baby still has a work.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah, really, it all comes back to the dancing baby.
Oh. Wait a minute. That's not even an original. This is like Barney. Yeah. They're using somebody else's tune.
I believe it's like an Indian company that just makes tons of web videos and sees what hits. Yeah.
And everything's a remix.
It's all algorithmic is what it is.
Mm-hmm. And there are a ton of these crazy baby videos. They're just like pure algorithmic trash. So one of my things is just like keeping my daughter away from all this stuff. So we're big into Studio Ghibli movies right now. Like that's her thing. Less good stuff, except for Peppa Pig. Yeah.
So this is interesting then. So have they somehow, these companies, are they're not using any research or any even intuition. They're just making
things. Detailed analytics that are just like,
they have analytics
videos. Yeah.
It's a feedback
videos,
loop.
What's hitting. Yeah.
There is a whole like subsection of kids YouTube that is clearly just like shoddily put together 3D animation and colors with computer generated sound and random sound effects that are just pumped out at high volume and then just in the hopes that it ends up in kids' YouTube feeds. It's actually kind of a weird, large problem that when it comes to the top 10 kids' YouTube channels, a lot of them, it's hard to tell who is behind the company, like behind the channel at all. It'll be like a random LLC and no idea whatsoever what company or people are actually behind it. The Wall Street Journal had a good piece a couple of years ago trying to find any of the people behind this, and they could not.
Fascinating. Let's go back in time. It was a more innocent time. YouTube had just emerged 2005, 2006. Here's a graph, thanks to Wikipedia, of the most viewed videos. And by the way, we're starting in the low millions. We never get higher than 19 million.
Oh, Evolution of Dance.
Remember that? Evolution of Dance. That's awesome. That's this one. That's the pink one. MySpace, the movie. Chronic of Narnia.
Yeah.
Lonely Island did such a great job of really getting these things. Yeah.
And then Touch of Gold. I don't remember that one. Actually... MySpace the movie looks like it was the big gainer in that time period. Do you remember that?
Vaguely.
Then here's Charlie bit my finger. Came on strong in October 2008 and just owned the world by a year later. Killing the Evolution of the Dance, which...
Ever look at these graphs and think, what is wrong with us?
This is somebody put a lot of effort into this.
But also probably one of the smartest things Google has ever done, other than the inside of the original search engine, right? Like this, they own internet video. Like that's it.
They do own it.
There's
don't
Vimeo,
they?
But who cares?
Vimeo, who?
They totally own it. Here's October 2009 through January 20. Now we're getting to billions. January 2013. Charlie bit my finger. Keeping alive. Bad romance. Baby, I don't know what baby is, probably Britney Spears, right? And then look at this green wedge, that's Oppo Gangnam Style, suddenly showing that a billion was within reach. And then we have the most recent through October 2020.
You're charting human evolution right now.
This is something. This is telling.
I will argue about evolution or
still
devolution.
Keeping up. That's impressive.
Yeah, baby. What is baby?
Baby.
Oh,
that
Bieber.
Justin Bieber song.
Bieber.
Yeah.
It's Bieber Baby. Okay.
Yeah, Bieber
and
Baby.
And here's Gangnam Style. Kind of, still going up, but leveled off a little bit. See You Again. The orange is Despacito. But look at this. Despacito and Baby Shark in a battle to the finish. And Baby Shark now on top. I can't believe I just spent 5 minutes on that.
Thank you, Leah. We're all so much smarter for this now. Thank you.
Oh, what a world we live in.
We need this, actually. We need this week.
I'm looking for stuff like this, to be honest with you, at this point.
Yeah, I just want to lean hard into smooth brain for a little bit.
Smooth brain.
Smooth brain.
Smooth brain.
Yeah, smooth brain, no problems. You can't lose.
Play Hades on your Switches, everybody. Hades is perfect.
So last week, I had to get up early at 5 to order an iPhone Pro Max or maybe Mini.
I got up at 8 a.m. here in the East Coast to get my iPhone 12 Pro.
Ooh, look pretty.
Nice.
Is that the Max or just the regular?
It's just the Pro, just the regular.
Just the regular. That's, I got my mom.
I've got a fancy case on it, though, that
let me see.
Quad lock case, and I can attach it to my bike because I just got a really nice e-bike.
Oh, nice.
Aren't e-bikes the best thing in the world? I don't know how they are in Brooklyn.
E-bikes are.
But I love them.
I was never a biker in New York because people here are crazy. But once the pandemic hit, it became the only mode of transportation.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Especially because a lot of people have, I don't know, left and traffic isn't that much here. It's a lot easier. So I upgraded to an e-bike recently from Wing Bikes, and it's been phenomenal. I just got the Wing Freedom X, which is their newest edition, came out last month, and it is a perfect machine. It's pedal assist. They've got so many different levels. It has like a built-in screen to it that'll show you how fast you're going and your battery level.
Here's the most important thing. Do you have a throttle?
It has a throttle, but I can't legally say whether or not I have it attached because that would not be
in New York. You can't attach. In California, it could still be a bicycle. It can only go 20 miles an hour and can have a throttle, but you have to have pedals. The throttle is so important when you're at a stoplight because you don't have to go to get going. You just throttle up, get it moving, and then you can pedal the rest of the way. I love throttle. So hook it up. Just be a lawbreaker. Go ahead. Do it.
Yeah, mine's been hooked up since I got it.
I know. Throttle's awesome.
Great.
I love it that they put it in the box and they say, but in your state, don't hook it up. Whatever you
do. Just be good.
Be good. Mm-hmm. How can I ask you how much?
I think it was, let me check.
They're expensive. They're really expensive.
Honestly, yeah. Wing Freedom, their Freedom X was actually not that expensive. It was starting at $1,298.
That's very good for an e-bike. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I got like the fancy insurance or whatever for it. So it ended up being like $1,500 or something like that.
That's not bad at all.
Really not bad at all. And it has like built into the stem there, like built in lights.
I love it. Really, I love it that beautiful. The battery powers both the rear and the front lights because that's so much more safe in a city.
And they haven't updated their website yet because, I mean, you can see on there, it looks like it has the little thing that comes off the handlebars, but the new version, like built into the stem, is like a screen that turns on whenever you turn on your bike.
Fancy.
And the new version, it like like right there in the middle of the stem, it has the thing that's on the left
anymore.
There.
It's this.
It's really cool.
Nice.
It's been my favorite purchase of like the last.
I love e-bikes. I have a Rad Power, which is a little more expensive. I bought it though because also it was less than, Our son is a senior in high school, has a Specialized e-bike, and it was like, I don't even know. It was
so expensive.
It was like, I like my Rad Power, but we're going to review, I think it's Ant just got the new Van Moof. No, wait a minute. That's what you're.
Beautiful.
Is it the Van? Yeah, the Van Moof. This is
it's a Dutch one.
Yeah.
I was looking at this, but they're really backed up right now in, delivery because everybody, I think, is
buying
bikes.
We're going to review it
right
on Hands on Tech. Yeah. You know what? I think we should just get rid of cars and all ride bikes.
I agree. Big fan of bikes.
I have this fantasy someday that the freeways in California will be, cars will be banned and we can all just ride our bikes. It'll be so great.
I think I'm using the bike that my wife got out of the dump.
Yeah, no, you need a better bike, Dan. Get a better bike. Now, I can't remember. Are you in Western Massachusetts?
No, I'm just outside Boston.
Oh, okay. So it's, but it's, can you bike? Is it?
I bike around sometimes. There's some good bike paths in the area too, including ones that do go out pretty far. So my wife and I do occasionally take the bikes out and just, hit the roads. There's some nice ones around here.
How did we get into this? I don't remember. How did we get started talking about bikes? I guess I was going to ask you. Oh, that's right. We're talking about ordering the iPhone. And now I'm thinking I got to get up early on the 11th at midnight to try to get in line to order a PS5. Xbox or PS5? Devendra, you're a gamer. Which one are you going for?
Yeah, I mean, I reviewed both. They are both sitting in my, den right now over here. So. They're
You're
very
reviewing
good.
Them both?
I've reviewed them both. And
are you allowed to talk about them other than the box?
Or? The embargo got lifted on the Xbox a couple of days ago.
The embargos on these things are the most insane and laughable things I've heard in a while.
Like a 20-page PDF from Sony with this. It's amazing.
Oh, my God. But
it's truly amazing.
But the embargo's up on the PS5 too now.
Yeah.
As well.
Yep. Reviews are up for both. Go check out my videos because it's some of the longest videos and longest reviews I've ever done. But I'm not going to pick a side because that's the thing. And I actually scored them exactly the same because these are gaming computers that are running basically the same hardware. They both have AMD Zen 2 processors. They both have RDNA 2 graphics, you know? So they're very, very similar. It's just like a couple little design tweaks here and there where I think they're different. I really lean to the Xbox Series X just because I'm more of an Xbox gamer. I like Game Pass, which is their subscription. Yeah, you pay $15 a month for that and Xbox Live, and you get a ton of games and all the first-party games. It seems like a no-brainer purchase for any Xbox gamer. And it's great. Like, it's fast. It does 4K well. It has all the ray tracing hardware we need. There aren't many games right now that fully take advantage of this hardware. And I think that's the big downside for Xbox. Whereas PS5 has, like, you know, it's Sony. Sony's always good with the big first-party games that people want to play. So they've got Miles Morales, Spider-Man. They have Demon Souls coming up. So those are things you'd want to buy a new system for. They're both giant boxes. These are PCs under your TV, basically.
This is a hysterical humble brag shot.
Oh, man.
Because only do the PS5 in the middle, but you've got this. Uh-huh. I could see the Series X in this corner and the Series S in this
That's
corner.
That's not my living room, but it's a good shot.
That's a hell of a humble brag. Oh, yeah, I got them. I got them all. Yeah. Yeah.
That's our executive editor, Aaron Siporis. And he is, you know, he helped me with the photos because he's just much better at that. But these things are huge. You need so much room for them. So I think that's something people just have to get over. I prefer the Xbox's design because it's just a box, but the PlayStation 5, it is ridiculous. It's
a PC.
That is huge. In fact, that's like massive. Yeah.
That's exactly what the tower case of the Razer gaming PC I got for our son is looks just like that.
Yeah, it's the same but size. The Razer gaming PC is not covered by like cheap plastic. Right. So I feel like that's the thing. They have very cheap plastic side panels. You could pull it off, stick in a new NVMe SSD down the line to like give it faster storage. The best thing about these consoles, they're both running NVMe SSDs. No more old, mm-hmm. ugly, slow laptop hard drives. No more of those. So they're fast. They load games super quickly. They're both doing interesting things when it comes to speeding up load time. So Microsoft has Quick Resume, which lets you jump between games pretty easily. Sony's load speeds in general just seem super fast. So Spider-Man loads like from title to gameplay 15 seconds or so. And there's no loading in the game itself. Like you'll be in Manhattan. You'll go into a building. You'll zip right out back into Manhattan. Nothing.
Oh,
so it's
almost
magic. Yeah, it's great.
Oh, man. It's interesting how it comes down to, like everything else in gaming, it's very narrow slices. Mm-hmm. So if you're playing, you know, if you want Spider-Man, you got to get a PS5. I mean, the exclusives are going to drive a lot of sales. I'm driven, as you were, by the, in fact, I was going to do the $35 Series X deal because
mm-hmm. it's a good deal.
You pay less for the hardware. You actually get a break on the hardware, and then you have to, you're subscribing to their, but for me, and different gamers are different, but I am not going to buy a title. Paul Theroux buys Call of Duty. He'll buy Call of Duty Cold War and just play that nonstop for four years or something.
Yeah.
That's it. For me, I'm not that serious about a game. I want to try a bunch of different games.
You want Game Pass, Leo.
So the Game Pass makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, for sure.
One flat rate. I have to say
Does it worry you at all to not own any of your games, though? Because, I mean, that's my...
I don't own anything. You don't own your
movies. I guess you don't
own your TV shows. You don't own your music.
I feel like I'm usually happy after I play a game for a while to sort of sit back and, like, not have to worry about it anymore. I mean, I've had an Xbox One for years, and, like, I've played a bunch of games on it, and it's nice to be able to finally be like, yeah, I'm done with that. And, like, I never know what to do with them afterwards. Do I... Like, you can't...
Yeah.
Reselling most of them these days, it's not worth that much. So I don't
there's
mind
a
the
lot
idea of
guilt
having the options.
When I look in my cupboard and there's the Assassin's Creed, you know, 15 different Assassin's Creed. And it's like, the Halo.
Also, those games take forever.
The Master Chief Collection. I got 18 DVDs. Yeah,
with Game Pass, by the way, you could still buy if you really love a game, because it's like it's a cycle of titles. If you love a game, you can buy it at a discount.
Yeah.
But they don't leave that quickly. So if you want to play a game for a month or two, like you can just play it on Game Pass, and all the first party games are just there. They're not going anywhere because that's the Microsoft's big draw. So I think that's good. They're getting Bethesda games soon. Like
that's
once
what
that
actually sold me
done.
Because yeah. I'm a Skyrim fan. Mm-hmm. And when they bought Bethesda,
we're going to be waiting what, another decade or
I
two
know.
For another Skyrim.
Oh, I know. Oh, I know, but they own it, right?
Yep.
So, I don't know. Yeah, you're right.
I feel like this argument, so Sony has always really led with, like, the killer games that people want to play, like Uncharted and Last of Us and everything. But with Bethesda, things are getting interesting.
Now, tell me about Miles Morales, because the ray tracing in that, the videos I've seen, looks pretty spectacular. I presume you reviewed it on a 4K HDR screen.
So it worked out really well because I had LG's latest CX OLEDs in my basement to test. So I was like, okay, perfect for these systems.
Yep.
That has HDMI 2.1, so it can do 4K up to 120 hertz. And that's the big draw.
Just living the charmed life.
Oh, my God. I'm so jealous.
It's super good. It's pretty good. But I also have spent the last week just writing like a crazy person. So I like reviewed the heck out of these things. Miles Morales, ray tracing. I feel like ray tracing is this thing we're all going to have to like learn to live with because it looks great, but it's running the game at 30 FPS, like Spider-Man did on the PS4. There is a 60 FPS mode, but there is no ray tracing because ray tracing is so hardware intensive.
Oh.
And honestly, I'd rather play the 60 FPS mode because it's Spider-Man. You're zipping through this city. So that's the big thing gamers will have to learn this year is that 30 FPS gaming, you'll get 4K rendering, you'll get ray tracing in there. But if you want the faster frame rate, which I think just looks better to most people, you'll probably have to sacrifice a lot.
I had no idea. So you're going to really stop down the frame rate in order to do the ray tracing. So you either get to enjoy the game or enjoy the lighting.
Mm-hmm. Kind of. Pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And honestly, I feel like we're going to see some games kind of balance how they do this. So I feel like Spider-Man, if they give us a 1080p mode with ray tracing, that was 60 FPS. I think the hardware could handle that. And I don't mind it being 1080p, just
look
to
at
get
the reflections, though. Look at this.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
Oh, my God. But you see that tearing's probably me, but that's it wouldn't.
And when you're climbing up skyscrapers with ray tracing on, you could see Spider-Man's reflection, reflection of the whole city. It's beautiful. But I want it at 60 FPS.
Yeah, it's more about scenery than it is about gameplay. Mm-hmm. So, that's interesting.
My one strange contribution to this is I learned the other day from my friend Matthew Olson, who's a writer at US Gamer, that apparently Tetris, the new Tetris, will also have ray tracing enabled in one level so that your blocks can shine with all the colors of the light.
That was the strangest thing about the Microsoft reveal of this summer. We're watching all these AAA games, and then they show Tetris.
They show Tetris. It's I was playing Geometry Wars on the Xbox Series X, which is an Xbox One launch title because they have this AI-driven auto HDR feature, which brings HDR into all your older games. So playing Geometry Wars on an OLED with that HDR like pop of color and light, it's beautiful. It is an amazing thing. So that's another big benefit of the Xbox side.
Well, you have not helped me decide.
Yeah, I'm an Xbox owner, but like the Miles Morales thing is like in the Spider-Man games were enough.
It's a great demo.
That tempts me so much, and I love Spider-Man.
Sony's controller, which I have right here, this thing is beautiful, and it feels really good, and they did a great job of basically giving us next-gen haptics, so the triggers can really manipulate the tension on this. So if you're pulling back a bow in a game, you can really feel it. Wow. There's a game, Astro's Playroom, which comes with the system. You can really feel the haptics where if you're walking on sand versus walking on metal or wood or something, you can feel it in the controller. So I think Sony's done a smart job here, and it's their first controller that doesn't look like the original PlayStation controller too. So yeah, shout out to them for that, finally.
Paris, can I get the code to visit your island?
I haven't played Animal Crossing forever.
I'll clean up the cockroaches.
It's absolutely
for you.
Covered in 3 months worth of weeds and cockroaches and whatever else.
There's
has
no ray tracing on the Nintendo Switch, I can assure you.
I did recently just get the Switch, the Ring Fit for the Switch.
Isn't that
I've
wild?
Been obsessed
it's so
with it. It's wonderful.
It's so
I love like the fact that for the Ring, it you can like push it in and out.
Yeah,
and it,
it's good exercise. It's
shockingly good exercise.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be more of a gimmick.
No, it's
but
fun.
No, yeah. It works.
Actually, I'm looking forward to Apple's going to release Fitness Plus in the next 4 weeks. And that's going to be really interesting with the Apple Watch.
It's another one more thing.
One more thing. They could actually do a December event. Let's go for it, Apple. Why not?
We got new.
It's not off the table.
For new AirPods. Yeah.
Don't
it's not
give
off
them
the
any
table.
Ideas.
You're right. Not off the table. It's great to have Paris Martineau with us from The Information, from Engadget, Devendra Hardawar, Dan Morin, Six Colors. This is a nice way to decompress after a very stressful week. I'm glad you're all here. Our show today brought to you by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage. If you are one of those companies, we are, where you're generating a lot of data and in a fairly consistent way, you know, we know there's going to be another terabyte every week of Twitch shows. You're probably thinking, why am I? I'm just buying more hard drives every week. What am I doing here? Look at Wasabi. Look at Hot Cloud Storage. Wasabi is so economical, it actually costs less than just the maintenance fees on that on-prem storage. And I would argue it's more secure, more reliable than any on-prem solution. This is cloud done right. 80% cheaper than Amazon S3, about as much as 5 or 6 times faster. It uses Amazon's API, but it doesn't charge for that. It doesn't charge for egress. That's always the thing that bugs me in a lot of cloud storage is, oh, look, it's cheap to store it there, but if you want it back, you're going to pay. Not with Wasabi. No charge for egress. And I think it's significantly more secure. 11 nines of durability. 11 nines. I don't know if you can get better than that. That means on average you'd lose one file maybe every 649,000 years. I don't know what the planet Earth's going to look like in 649,000 years, but all your files will still be there. All your data is hosted in premier tier 4 data center facilities, not only highly secure, but they're fully redundant. That's a good thing because Wasabi has active integrity checking. Every object stored on Wasabi is checked for integrity every 90 days. And because they're in redundant data centers, if one bit goes missing, you can get it back. You can get it back. Try that with your on-prem storage. Wasabi follows industry's best security models and design practices. They have access control mechanisms like bucket policies and ACLs. The best thing, I love this, your data is immutable. So ransomware, hackers, fumble-fingered employees, your drunk self at 3 a.m. cannot change your data. So it's safe. In fact, they encrypt automatically whether you request it or not at rest. Wasabi is HIPAA compliant, FINRA compliant, CJIS compliant. It is the best way to store data. A flat fee, so you always know exactly how much it's going to cost, or you can save even more with something they call reserved capacity storage. If you know I'm going to be using this much data every month for the next, you know, forever, you can buy storage ahead of time in increments of 1, 3, or 5 years. The discounts go up for the more capacity and the longer the term. So it's another way to save even more with Wasabi. And if you're a managed service provider and you sell storage, you'll love it too because you'll be making more and charging less. Wasabi's not just highly secure, disruptive technology that's turning the industry on its ear. It's storage that's 80% less expensive and up to 6 times the speed of the industry leader. You calculate the savings for yourself. You can start a free trial of storage for a month at wasabi.com. I love these guys. Their founder, David Friend, is a longtime friend. He's so impressive, so smart. And his CTO, Jeff Flowers, they really invented something transformational. Join the movement. Migrate your data to the cloud and do it with confidence. Wasabi, wasabi.com. And do me a favor, use the offer code TWIT when you do that free trial. That way they'll know you saw it on This Week in Tech. Wasabi.com, offer code TWIT. Thank you, Wasabi. We had a good week. a great week, nay, a fantastic week on Twit. We even made a little video for you to watch, so you'll feel bad that you missed any of it. Watch.
How thankful are we to be together on this Tuesday night with nothing going on in the world and all we can do is talk about all about Android. Like, it's a great life. Yeah.
The most important news today is definitely Android news, and that's why All About Android doesn't stop. Not for November 3rd, 2020.
Previously on Twit. This Week in Enterprise Tech.
Are you ready for disaster recovery? Well, the pandemic period has put us on high alert, and we'll take you through 9 cyber disaster recovery planning tips to help you out.
Hands-on iOS.
I am going to show you Apple's new subscription bundle service. It's Apple One. Here's how you get it.
Hands-on Android.
Coming up, I'm going to show you how to take an old device that's gathering dust and turn it into a home automation control center.
This Week in Google.
The Ring Video doorbells. They're going to pilot a program in Jackson, Mississippi with the local police to live stream Amazon's Ring cameras.
Not all about the people that actually own Ring, though, you know?
What if I get murdered in my house and you don't discover the body? You would still like to see who came and went, right? Yeah. I just want you to know, it'll almost certainly be my wife.
Twit.
And she's got a very credible excuse.
He had it coming.
He just wouldn't stop talking. Join us every week for all of our shows on Twit. And thanks to our great editors, because they put that together every week. In fact, the holidays are coming, and you know what that means. Our best ofs are just around the corner. We've got some fun stuff on all of our shows. Let's see. Anything more to say? I don't think about the PS5 or the Xbox Series X. You probably already know which one you would get if you could get one, which you can't. So forget about it, right?
I think the main thing, by the way, is that there is no big rush for this stuff. But, you know, especially I've talked to a lot of PC gamers who are like, I really want to pick up a new console. But you guys, if you have a decent, you know, a recent NVIDIA video card or something with an RTX, then you have most of these features already. So, yeah, don't worry. Don't sweat it until the really great games come out.
Gaming must be huge right now because video cards are sold out. There's just a land rush for these consoles, for the new RTX card. I mean, it's just crazy. Even the AMD Ryzen chips, boom, sold out like that. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, it's good news, I guess, for the tech industry. People are spending money on tech. Actually, makes sense.
You have nothing else to do.
There's nothing. I find myself doing the same thing. I'm not eating out. So money that I'm not spending on things like travel and eating out, I'm spending on upgrading my environment at home, right?
Why not? I was trying to buy a flight stick to play Star Wars Squadrons with, and they're gone. Nope. They're all gone. They're all gone.
But I don't think that's because of Squadrons. I think that's because of
Flight Simulator.
Microsoft's Flight Simulator.
I just got hit. I get hit by the follow-on effect there.
Oh, you want to play Star Wars? No problem. We'll get you one. No problem. In California, we passed Prop 22, and there's been a lot of hand-wringing from labor advocates. But I think there's also, I mean, this is a tough one. I voted yes on Prop 22. This is the one that said Uber and Lyft drivers can be employed as independent contractors. They don't have to be, as California employment law has said, and AB5 in particular, they don't have to be employees. And you know, I'll tell you why I voted yes, because I know so many people in our business, freelance tech journalists, who, if they lived in California, lost gigs, lost work, because they were covered by these crazy laws. They can only write so many articles before the company would have to hire them. And you know, as you guys all know, you work in the business. Most of the people who write for tech publications are freelancers. You guys are staffers. Well, Dan, I don't know what
you're... No, I'm a freelancer.
You're a freelancer, yeah. Nevertheless, I saw Robert Reich, former Clinton labor secretary, and others bemoaning this, like this is going to be the end of the labor movement in the United States. Did I do the wrong thing?
I think it's tricky to sort of distinguish, because there's certainly circumstances where these people feel like it feels like they should have the option for things like benefits. And I know Prop 22 did allow some benefits to sort of trickle down, and there is a freedom aspect of being able to have either the choice of being an employee, but like kind of it still does feel to a certain extent that when it comes to like the ride sharing companies and those kinds of gig economies and sort of new gig economy stuff, that there is a lot of advantage being taken of labor markets. But it's not cut and dried, I think, is the big problem. It's like they wanted to kind of apply a one solution fits all approach to it, and it turns out it's more complicated than that, unsurprisingly. Yeah.
I'll tell you that Lyft and Uber spent a lot of money on ads. They even got the chairman of the Mothers Against Drunk Driving to come out in support of it, because she said, well, you know, if people can't take Ubers and Lyfts, they're going to get on the road and kill our children. Mm. And it's like, well, I can't vote for that. I got to better vote for that. I have mixed feelings, because I do believe in the labor movement. I don't want people to be taken advantage of. Is it foolish of me to say, but Lyft and Uber drivers are choosing that? And obviously, if they choose it, they like it. Or am I just?
Yeah, I think it's mm-hmm. it's challenging, because I can imagine a lot of people who do want the security of a full-time job from these things. But certainly the flexibility is proving to be one of the things that a lot of the people who are doing these kinds of work want. Yeah. They want the ability to set their own hours. They want their ability to work when they feel like it and not have to go in for a 9-to-5 job, which is totally understandable. But really, I mean, honestly, I feel like so much of this potentially could be solved if you had something like socialized healthcare, for example, where wasn't tied to your employment status. So like maybe this is a symptom, not the root cause.
Uber and Lyft would not exist if they had to pay a fair wage, if they were responsible for benefits. You know, the way it works, you own the car, you pay the insurance, you pay the gas, they give you a pittance. Mm-hmm. I understand.
It's not like they're making a profit even at this point.
But they still
right?
lose so, a huge yeah. amount of money. I mean, they said, and I think it's fairly credible, if this does not pass, we're leaving California. So I don't mm-hmm. know. You know, California had just passed a law saying, or a judge rather, had just ruled that they do have to pay. They can't be contract employees. They do have to pay full wages. But I think this law overturns that. Furthermore, and this is something that's kind of nasty about it, it is a lock-in. It says this law can only be overturned by the state legislature with 7/8 of the legislature.
Wow.
That's crazy. Jeez. Talk about a supermajority. You might as well say, it's got to be unanimous.
Yeah.
What, you know, Paris, you live in Brooklyn. I'm sure you take Ubers, or used to anyway, take Ubers and Lyfts, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's, I think, a really complicated issue because, I mean, as you said, these companies wouldn't exist if they did not from the get-go kind of source their labor from this strange gray area in current labor laws, where they have employees that are working essentially full-time hours, but for not the same sort of minimum wage or just wages generally that you'd expect with full-time work. And that traps a lot of people in a precarious situation. And I know that a lot of labor groups that support these workers, or are made up of contract drivers, fought against Prop 22 solely because they wanted a kind of different option.
Right. Some of them contended that, you know, if these companies were forced to, they could figure out a way to make the job flexible and still pay benefits.
I mean, I'd certainly hope that for all of the innovation, for all the things we laud these companies with, they're able to make this incredible new app, like they should also maybe be able to make it create a business that works in current labor laws, but I guess there's always the option of changing the labor laws to fit the business,
right?
Which is what happened in this case.
Uber and Lyft. I don't want them to go out of business. I don't these days, but my daughter does. I would prefer to have her take Lyft than drive a car. It's very expensive. She can't afford it. She takes mass transit whenever possible, but she has a late shift. She's going to have to take a Lyft home. Taxis are not widespread in California. And I don't think being a taxi driver is a walk in the park either, for that matter.
Mm-hmm. No, it's been really tough for taxi drivers in New York. Like that's it's an ongoing thing because the actual value of the medallions just dramatically plummeted or something. So Yeah, that's been a major problem all around. Hey, these are big, tough problems. AB5, I just know from having a lot of freelancer friends in California and people who write for California-based sites, terrible. You know, that really... That made their lives incredibly difficult. Yeah. That thing was just kind of a disaster.
It was not designed at all for that. It did not have any understanding of how that job market works at all.
That was really what swayed me. And people like Mike Elgin, our own Aunt Pruitt, who used to live in North Carolina, was able to write for Tech Republic. As soon as he moved to California, Tech Republic said, because of AB5, the bill that put this in effect, they said, we can't. You're out of work. We can't use you because of these restrictions on how we can use you. I understand. It'd be really great if Tech Republic could hire Ann as a full-time employee. It'd be really great if Mike Elgin could get benefits and a job and all that. But that's just not how, at least in my business, in our business, the tech business, that's just not how it works. Almost everybody who's on our shows is a contract employee. And they want to be. They're happy.
Yeah. I like that. I mean, I worked full time at Macworld for 7 years and I enjoyed that, but I really love the flexibility of having my own schedule and doing my own work when I want to do it. And it's a plus for sure, but it does come with its challenges.
Yeah.
This would all sound so much better. Like, you guys brought up healthcare, but that's really it. Like, this would all be so much easier 100%. If we didn't have to worry about this, if we were like so many other, first world countries. So, That's the big thing. I think of I have friends in Germany.
Right.
Oh, sorry. Continue.
No, go for it.
I was saying healthcare wasn't supposed to be tied to employment forever. This was a Band-Aid put on after, I believe it was World War II, and yet somehow we've stuck with it this entire time as our dominant system, and it certainly has a lot of compounding impacts. I mean, especially as somebody who, working in media staff jobs, I've preferred being on staff, but I've also been laid off twice in the last couple of years. And it is awful just in the sense that
suddenly you've got no
benefits.
It's hard
to, you have to be like, oh, I could, if I get injured, be in debt for the rest of my life, or I have to pay $1,000 a month for Cobra, which I can't afford because now I am unemployed.
Right.
Yeah.
It isn't right. We've got to fix that. I think we all agree. But this is a larger challenge. And I think you could also, and I'm sure there'll be advertisements to make this case. Why should taxpayers subsidize Uber and Lyft by paying their employees benefits, their health care benefits? And that's a good point too. we got to solve this. I agree. Yeah. We also just passed. A privacy law, Prop 24 in California. This was an add-on to our already very strict California Privacy Act. This made it even stricter, although there are interesting loopholes. A number of people pointed out, notice Facebook did not lobby against Prop 24. And maybe one of the reasons is Facebook is big enough to adhere to the requirements of Prop 24, but it pulls up the ladder against smaller companies who can't. That might be one reason. This was another tough one. Poor California voters. We have to do the work of the legislature. I voted for this one as well because I feel like more privacy protections are probably a good thing. It's still not nearly as strict as GDPR, but it did bring in some of the GDPR rules. And now I understand none of you are California voters or technically affected by this. But if there is a privacy law in one of the states, it's very likely that every other state will benefit from that because companies aren't going to have different policies for every state, right?
I mean, I feel like companies often do. As somebody who spends an inordinate amount of my time reading terms of service or privacy policies, I'm that person who actually does try and read it now before I agree to anything, because legally they have to be kind of clear and easy to read, and that often does impact us thanks to GDPR. But generally, I mean, the protections only apply to California, and for the rest of the country, I can't request to see any of the data that companies are collecting on me. Meanwhile, colleagues that I have that are in California can. And I assume kind of a similar dichotomy applies to data collection. I assume that these companies that have made so much money finding every loophole in my privacy that they can are not going to give it up just because one state out of 50 has passed some laws.
Right.
It's like the digital equivalent of how every time I open up a product, and it's like, this is known to contain, you know, things that cause cancer in the state of California. And I always wonder, like, does it only cause cancer
only in California? Only in
Canada.
That the Prop 65 warning is another great example of California voters being, and it's apparently very easy to get a proposition on the ballot. I think 100,000 signatures and you're good. And yeah, that's a great example. You can't go anywhere without seeing a Prop 65 warning in California, which effectively eliminates the warning because it's there. It's everywhere. You can't. I'm sure there are cancers. I mean, the chemicals known to cause cancer here in this building, and there's a Prop 65 warning out front. So what do you, you know, what is it? It immediately dilutes it all. Same thing with the cookie warning that we now see on every GD website, thanks to GDPR.
It's annoying. You just click through it a lot of times.
Just click through
Except
it.
All. I just make the banner go away, please.
Go away. I just was on a site that keeps popping it up. Thank you. That's nice. That's user-friendly.
It's really great on top of all the pop-up ads and everything else we're getting now, too. And please, the notifications. Yes, please. Let me know your location and send me notifications.
No, stop it. Go away.
This button if you're receiving too many notifications.
One of the most controversial parts of the California privacy law, it allowed companies to charge consumers who opt out of having their data sold. Now, on the face of it, that sounds like a good idea. You have a choice. You want to keep using Facebook? Okay. $5 a year, $5 a month, whatever. That seems like a fair trade. But there were those who say, oh, now privacy is a luxury item. Mm-hmm. And only people with money can afford to have privacy.
Yeah. I mean, it's already a luxury item.
That's true. That's true.
Now the transaction, I guess, is becoming more apparent in some cases, although I doubt that. I don't know. It seems not beneficial to a company to kind of make it that apparent, especially when California is the only state where this applies. But already people who are at an economic disadvantage are the ones who are being exploited the most when it comes to data and privacy. That's just a fact.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. You know, this election, this had a lot of follow-on effects, and we won't know what they are for a while. We'll see how the world is going to change.
Massachusetts.
That's what we call ourselves here, Massachusetts.
MASSACHUSETTS. Massachusetts voters passed a right to repair expansion covering vehicle data. And I think really, quite rightly, preventing companies from locking out.
It was such an interesting campaign here because, Leo, you just mentioned the getting the Mothers Against Drug Driving involved. And here, the big sort of scare tactic that the opposition was using was the ability for, you know, just anybody could get your data about where your cars were. So they were using like domestic abuse kind of as an example of like, oh, now your, you know, abusive ex can find you anywhere. And it's like, well, that's not exactly what this is about. I mean, there are certainly data security concerns. You want to make sure that if this system does exist, it is well secured. But that's true of any system that uses any personal data, right? Like any location-based system, which is a ton of stuff that we use right now. But overall, I think, you know, it passed by a wide margin because, you know, we passed the first right to repair law back in 2012. And, you know, this basically was like, well, more and more stuff has been moving to online resources, which the manufacturers can control by essentially saying you can only log in if we decide that we want you to log in. If you're so opening that up to third parties, I think is potentially a big win, both for, you know, independent mechanics who are the sort of the big, you know, constituency we're talking about here, but also just anybody who wants to make devices that work with some of these cars that are so technological that you can't, you know, kind of get access to these systems anymore.
I wonder, though, if it's still a lockout for individual consumers. I mean, how expensive will these devices be? How much skill will you need to use to operate them? It's great for independent mechanics, not so much for the shade tree mechanics.
Yeah, and I think that there's a big question still outstanding as to what exactly this looks like, right? Because if you have to have all automakers complying with this and it has to be sort of broadly accessible, how are you going to implement that? Are you going to have them all use one sort of system or protocol? Are there going to be everybody have their own little siloed systems? How are you going to roll this out and make it secure, and who gets access, et cetera? So, yeah, there's a lot of implementation details to figure out, but I think it's a good first step.
Is it, would it be through the OBD2 port, the onboard diagnostics port?
Well, I think this is actually for online specifically, like stuff where your car might
telematics
stuff where it's like far, you know, Tesla talks to its servers or whatever and gets diagnostic information that's only reported via their closed web portal or something like that.
It always bugged me when I had a Tesla. I don't have one anymore, but we had a problem with it going forward when it was supposed to go backward, and we called and they said, well, wait a minute, let me look. Oh, you know,
that's a very big problem.
Yeah.
Like a major issue car-wise.
Yeah. And they said, well, let me look at the logs. And they said, okay, what time did this happen? And they said, oh, no, you were in reverse when that happened. Or you weren't in reverse when it was.
Right.
What you mean, you know? Oh, yeah, we know everything. Yeah. We know it all, but they don't share that with you, of course.
Sure.
Right.
That was a little eye opener. Oh, yeah, no, we're looking at the logs. It worked as expected. It says so right here.
That's not a bug. It's a feature.
Okay. I guess I was dreaming. Kyle Weens, the founder of iFixit, one of our sponsors, a great guy, says this will be the most advanced right-to-repair law in the world, opening wireless automotive diagnostics and unleashing a world of possible apps. That's interesting. So you could have an app on your phone maybe that would say, mm-hmm. You know, you went backwards when you were supposed to go forwards. I could see it right here. Okay.
That's what all of my apps tell me every day.
That's life. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going backward, man.
I open Twitter and I'm like, oh, I'm clearly going backwards emotionally.
Okay, there's your mistake right there. Never open Twitter.
It's true. It's my life motto.
Actually, let's take a break and then I wouldn't mind asking that question. Whither Twitter? Now that the election is over. Whither Twitter? Our show today. Twitter, I know what's happening with Twitter. I know exactly. But Twitter, I'm not so sure. This Week in Tech brought to you by NetSuite. NetSuite gives you visibility and control over everything you need to know if you're running a business. Financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more. Everything you need all in one place at the same time. That's an awesome thing. I know I watched Lisa trying to run our business. She's got a 49-inch wide screen so she can get QuickBooks open and the spreadsheets open and all the different files open that she needs to look at. And then she has to scan it back and forth to figure out what's going on. You know, using QuickBooks spreadsheets, that's slowing you down. If you are tired of working on multiple platforms and you want to take your business to the next level, now's the time to upgrade to NetSuite. Running a fast-growing, small or medium-sized business is not easy. I know, I hear the screams. You need a solution that's constantly evolving to meet your needs. And NetSuite is the world's number one cloud business system. NetSuite gives you cloud-based solutions, streamlines mission-critical business processes, reduces IT costs, and allows you to easily scale and future-proof your business with an agile business platform that evolves as your needs change. You can close with confidence. You can report with accuracy. After all, financial accuracy is everything. You can even drill down into the underlying details, understand exactly what's impacting your business, because you're getting real-time information, real-time metrics. You got role-based dashboards. You'll never be in the dark about what's going on in your business, where your money's going, how business processes are working. Look at the Commvault example. They turned to NetSuite's cloud solution as the platform that could dramatically reduce complexity and provide much-needed agility. They use the Suite Cloud Development Platform to support unique processes and to integrate with third-party cloud applications. And, of course, the apps from NetSuite partners round out the company's updated environment. It's really, really cool what you can do. SolarWinds says, we needed more than just a good accounting solution. We had to responsibly manage growth. NetSuite provided the business application infrastructure to do exactly that. Stop paying for multiple systems. NetSuite delivers what others can't. No wonder 22,000 companies are upgrading to NetSuite. Let NetSuite show you how they'll benefit your business with a free product tour. NetSuite, NetSuite, NetSuite.com/twit. Just fill out that form and get a free product tour right now. NetSuite.com/twit. We thank NetSuite for supporting This Week in Tech. And we thank you for supporting us by using that address. If you're interested, let them know you saw it here. NetSuite.com/twit. Do not confuse Twitter with twit. That's for sure. two different things. Do you think? I mean, Twitter has. Let's face it. The dirty little secret of big media and Twitter and Facebook is the Trump administration has been a great thing for them. It's been great for ratings. It's been great to drive traffic. Twitter is in the news practically every single day, thanks to the president's tweets. That's all going to go away. Or not. Maybe not. Maybe he'll still tweet.
He's probably still going to tweet.
He's still going to tweet.
Like, we couldn't be that lucky, could we?
Yeah. I don't know. You know, I wonder, one of the things people are speculating, when he no longer is the president of the United States, he will no longer be protected as a world leader.
Oh, I mean, I think they're still going to consider his tweets the same way they would any presidential. The one thing that is for certain is Twitter is never going to ban Donald Trump from Twitter.com. That's not going to happen.
Really? Okay. They did. It was remarkable. They have been very quick to cover his tweets with, "That's not true. That's not true. That's not true. That's not true." They're still doing it.
It only took them 4 years.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right. It's clear they're very aware of the value that he represents and the value that his supporters represent to the platform. It's really interesting. We'll watch. Singles Day is coming. Alibaba is trying to make Singles Day, which is November 11th. So what is that? That's
11-11.
Mm-hmm. Just four times bigger than Prime Day.
Four times the number of ones, too.
1-1-1-1. Last year, 11-11. So what is Singles Day? It's a Japanese, like, to celebrate being single?
It's like another commercial holiday, from what I know.
Yeah. It's like Prime Day.
Basically.
Yeah. Chinese youth. It originated in the 1990s as a day in which Chinese youth would go on blind dates, which is because 11-11 is singles, right? 1-1-1-1. Mm-hmm. 1. But also couples. 1-1-1-1. It morphed into a day in which Alibaba's retail market offered deep discounts, became their Prime Day. Last year, 11-11 was worth $38 billion of transactions on Alibaba alone.
It's amazing.
Alone.
Yeah. A lot of money.
$38 billion, and they expect it to be even bigger. I've seen pictures of robot delivery vans that are being lined up to get ready to deliver all these goods to singles in China.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure, I don't know exactly what's going on the ground in China right now, but I know at least in the U.S. there has been this huge push. I mean, part of the reason why Prime Day was in October is they're trying to stretch out the holiday season so that the supply chain doesn't completely collapse, as does shipping infrastructure.
Happens all at once. Yeah.
I mean, just because we're already at max capacity when it comes to the amount of mail and packages that can be sent around the U.S. and delivered, then you throw in mail and ballots, then you throw in all of the holiday shopping and it all being just online because people are too afraid to go in stores because we still haven't gotten the pandemic under handle, and it's going to be a mess.
Prime Days, because it was 2 days, was $10 billion this year in the U.S.
As Amazon says, only Amazon could turn Prime Day to fit 48 hours.
It's a Prime Day miracle.
It's a miracle.
Every year.
So the stats from Amazon Web Services on Prime Days, 16.4 trillion calls to their database API, peaking at 80 million requests a second, 241 petabytes of pre-provisioned storage, 280 million HTTP requests per minute, 450 billion requests across the 66 hours of Prime Day.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, just thinking about Prime Day, because when Amazon announced the day, of course, within a few hours, Target announced Deal Days, which were around the same time, and Walmart announced Big Save, which was the name of an event for some reason. Just Big Save.
Big
not
Save.
Not Big Save Day, not Big, big Save. Savings, but just Big Save.
Big Save, too
big
many
save
words.
Used to,
big Save.
Big Save used to pitch for the Cardinals? Or
yeah, sure.
Big Save. He had
large
an arm,
adult
didn't he?
Save son.
It's so funny because only Amazon could turn Prime Day into a pitch for AWS. Like, see how we handled Prime Day? Now you too, go ahead. Come on, try it, Target. You too can do Prime Day. That's amazing. I wonder how many, I'd like to see some delivery numbers from Prime Day. I know I get an Amazon. Yesterday, I had three Amazon deliveries within an hour.
Yeah.
It seems like they could consolidate those a little bit. I don't know.
There is an option whenever you're buying to combine it into one order Amazon Day deliveries where it all gets delivered in one day a week.
I don't like that. I want it tomorrow. I'm not going to wait till Monday.
Okay, then you and your three Prime boxes every hour.
Oh, Monday is tomorrow. Well, then maybe I will.
True.
You know what? You can't buy it now. It's already sold out, but I was very impressed with the Raspberry Pi 400, a Raspberry Pi and a keyboard, a complete computer in effect, just add monitor, mouse, and keyboard for $70.
Cool. Oh, no. It reminds me of like the
monitor and mouse. It has a keyboard.
Yeah, that's right.
Never mind.
That's cool. It feels like a Commodore 64.
It's cool.
Like,
yes.
The 80s, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's got that vibe to it. I was very tempted by this, but I ultimately didn't because I knew I would get it and then I would play around with it for like a week and then it would go into the bin with all the other stuff that I never used.
All the other Raspberry Pis. I have three or four in a box. Yeah. They're cool.
You could open a bakery, a pie bakery.
Oh.
Ooh, just in time for Thanksgiving.
Oh, that's true.
If only. I think we could wrap this thing up. Now that you mentioned pie, I'm getting hungry. So, Paris Martineau, you're the greatest. She's a reporter at The Information at Paris Martineau. Plug something.
Follow me on Twitter. Yeah, I'm at Paris Martineau.
Nice.
This week I'm having a big story on Amazon come out. So keep your eyes peeled.
Can you give us a hint? Anything?
It has to do with a part of Amazon's logistics operations.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so that question I was asking, maybe you have the answer.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
So, does it involve drones? They're actually going to do that, aren't they? Drone delivery.
So they're working on it, but it's still a ways away. It's going to be probably for rural areas because it's so costly otherwise to ship. But yeah, drones eventually.
Remember when Charlie Rose, how many years ago was that on 60 Minutes? Jeff Bezos showing him around.
It was 2013 or something like that. He was like, within 5 years, we're going to have drones.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Everything's always 5 years away.
And Charlie Rose was like, oh, that's so cool. Oh, that's so cool. And everybody else is going, Charlie, get a grip on yourself. That's way off.
Did just come in here, so give you guys a little cat.
Oh,
hi, Gizmo.
Gizmo, what a good
Black
name.
Black and whites are great.
Yeah, it's
what
great.
A great name. Boy
She's
or girl?
A good time.
Gizmo could be either.
She's a girl.
She's a Gizmo.
Yeah, and then so I've got Gizmo and Gadgets.
Oh, you know? My God. That's hysterical. Thank you, Paris. Have fun on your bike. Be careful. Wear a helmet. Okay?
I shall. Yes. I wear a helmet. Got lights.
Good. Yeah, you got lights front and back. I saw them.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Very cool.
Built in.
Devendra Hardawar, he also has his own podcast, the Slash Film Show.
Slash Film Cast.
Slash Film Cast. What's going on over there?
A bunch of stuff. We actually just launched a Patreon, so we are pumping out a whole lot more stuff. We're doing our After Dark segment now, which is just us kind of hanging out and having fun chats that are not necessarily film related, and our listeners really dig that. So, you know, go check all that out. I'm doing the Engadget podcast too, and that's been a lot of fun because we get to talk with everybody in Engadget to dive deeper into the stuff too. So, hey, yeah, that's our Patreon right
I like
now.
It. There are three levels of membership. For $5, you could be a watcher. For $10, you could be a good sitter. $25 a month, you get to be a money horse.
These are all in jokes. These are all in jokes, but our listeners know what's up. And it's a fun show.
A horse made of cash.
I'm a money horse.
One of my co-hosts couldn't figure out the phrase cash cow, and he came up with money horse
is better.
We're stuck with it.
Much better.
That is better.
And, of course, catch Devendra at Engadget. His reviews of both. That is overachieving. The Xbox Series X and the PlayStation 5. Jeez Louise. Your thumbs must be killing you.
My thumbs, my everything, because I've had to ignore my child for the past week.
Daddy's playing games. Leave me alone.
Well, it's not even the game. Like, I want to play more of the game so I can actually review it, but it's the writing part that takes forever. I hate it.
Ugh, writing.
Low work.
Ugh. Writing.
Ugh. Whoever thought that was a good idea? That's why I talk for a living, Devendra. Mm, I learned.
I need to think about this.
I learned talking is so much easier than writing. and of course, it's great to see you, Dan. You're going to be a little busy on Tuesday, I imagine.
Yeah, it's going to be a big week.
Yeah.
There isn't a week this so far that isn't a big week in the last 7 months.
I know. Which iPhone did you end up going with?
I've got a 12 Pro in Pacific Blue.
Yeah, I thought I'd get the blue. I thought I'd go
It's
crazy.
A really pretty color. I've got the same.
You have the blue too?
Pretty.
Oh, I can't wait. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going with the Max just because I want to try those cameras. I'm very intrigued by the low light.
I can't do the big screen. It's too big for me. So I was tempted by the mini.
It's got to be able to fit in my pockets, you know? Mm-hmm.
I got big pockets. Big pockets.
Big pockets for days.
Big pockets.
Don't be in the pocket a big pocket. Yeah.
I got money horse sized pockets. Thank you, Dan. It's great to see you. Thank you, Devendra. Thank you, Paris. Thanks to all of you for joining us. We do This Week in Tech every Sunday afternoon, 2:30 Pacific time. That's 5:30 Eastern time. That's 21:30 UTC. You can watch us do the work live if you want. If you like the behind the scenes conversation, that kind of thing. We stream live audio and video all the time at twit.tv/live. Whenever you're there, there'll be something going on. And if you're watching it, you should join the chat room because there's always somebody there too, all over the world. irc.twit.tv. But if you just don't know when you'll have some time, why don't you get the on-demand versions of the show? You could download audio and video from our website at twit.tv. Of course, there's a YouTube channel with This Week in Tech. And we encourage you to get a better podcast app than Apple's podcast. Maybe Pocket Cast, maybe, or whatever.
Maybe.
Whatever. We're on all of them, even Stitcher and Slacker and Spotify and Google's podcast. Just subscribe. That way you'll get it automatically. You'll have it Monday morning, just in time for your non-existent commute. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Have a great week. I told my son I was going to plug his Instagram. Do you mind? Hey, you know, I got a little nepotism here because the reason is he's learning how to be a drone pilot, and he started to post his drone videos on his Instagram, and they're actually pretty darn cool. Yeah, that's a good career for a young guy.
It's a good skill right now.
He studied at CU Boulder. He studied broadcast journalism, which I thought, oh, geez, please. But he ended up.
Leo, I feel like you would have given him some advice there.
I tried. I said, there's no future in it, kid. But he did learn how to do videography and editing, and now the drone thing is a nice little addition to it. This is
you can broadcast journalism from drones. That's the future.
Exactly. He did he's been doing stuff for wineries. This is the night harvest at Hudson Ranch in Napa. They do it at night because it's cool. So the grapes, the sugar in the grapes are
very cool. Skill to have right
very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't that neat? So Hank LaPorte on Instagram, I said I would plug it.
And also, when the robot wars start, he is first in line to pilot some drones again.
Yes, that's right. Did you watch Raised by Wolves? What did you think of that?
It's
I was
fine.
Disappointed. Like, I liked the first episode.
I've only seen a couple episodes, but yeah. I'm not going to keep going. There's so much other better TV out
It ends
now.
Poorly. What do you like these days? I'm always asked Devendra because he's...
I'm into the Queen's Gambit.
Oh,
everybody's talking about Queen's Gambit. It's really good.
Everybody's watching that show.
It's not a great show. It's chess. But
I've heard that it's like a bad dialogue or something like
it's
that.
It's not
right?
great. It's not great.
Why is it good then if it's not great?
Well, it's a really... Because it's an adaptation of a novel, and I think it feels very fresh and different compared to like most streaming Drek we get now. So
you know what,
it's
Paris,
really compelling.
It's a beautiful and very stylish, but also troubled young woman who becomes the top at chess, which is a man's sport, especially in the 50s and 60s. It's got great period look. It's got great period fashion. She's
amazing.
It's
a good escape. right now. Yeah.
Anya Taylor, I can't remember her name, but she's
Anya Taylor Joy. She's been fantastic. A ton of horror movies lately.
Yeah. But she was also Emma in that comedy adaptation of Emma.
She's very good in that.
She's brilliant. So I think the reason people love it is because of her. And I played tournament chess. I played in the U.S. Open that year that they, 1968 or whatever. So I can tell you, it rings 100% true. So it really is. The only difference is they're moving a lot faster. it's not quite as exciting a game when you're actually watching real chess.
You got to make chess exciting somehow. Come on.
Yeah. It's, you know what? I think it's also because it's kind of relaxing.
Yes.
Nobody dies.
No, a lot of people die. It's actually a show filled with a lot of death, apparently. But yeah. I mean, she's an orphan. Her parents die.
Her mom dies at the beginning. There's only one. Yeah. And there's a funeral at the end. Okay, so people do die, but only in nice
death. A little light death.
light. There's no blood. Great. It's somebody in the chat room says it's relaxing. It's a relaxing.
It's very relaxing.
You get a little nervous for her, but then she settles down. Somehow she becomes...
And also...
Go ahead.
I hope you've seen Ted Lasso, Leo, because Ted Lasso is one of the best.
I saw your show on
that. Ted Lasso's fantastic. It's so good.
It's a little treacly.
Highly recommend it.
It's a little treacly.
It's not. It's not treacly. Come on. It's hopeful. It's uplifting. Yeah. What else on TV is hopeful and uplifting?
It's treacly.
Did you finish it or are you like halfway through?
Yeah, I finished it. I liked it.
Yeah.
It's the only – Apple TV has been a little bit of a disappointment, I have to say. But that's a decent one. I think they're – I have hopes for Apple TV. I think they might – they're starting to kind of get in the gear a little bit. It was unexpected. Let's put it that way.
Nobody expected it to be that good. Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody expected Ted Lasso to be good at all. Lasso.
Because he was created for a commercial. Like that character is a
marketer. Jason Sudeikis created it for – was it ESPN or some football thing. And it's pretty funny. It's okay. It was a little treacly.
Spender and I'll be over here just talking about it being
it's just good. Like, he is the character. I would not want to be friends with him because he seems super annoying, but watching him,
he's very annoying.
People's really interesting.
He's extremely annoying because he's so upbeat and happy,
but he's not just upbeat because he's got problems. And I think
always got to be problems. Why can't we just have a character with no problems? Everything's good.
I know.
Smooth brain. Can't quit.
There's so much problems and drama.
We have Jeopardy.
No, we don't.
Not anymore. Actually, the rumor is that the Ken, who was the guy who won all those Jeopardies?
Jennings.
Might be taking over
they'd already hired him as a consultant, earlier in the year.
Yeah. That would be nice. Would you say Alex Trebek was one of the nicest people on the planet? He had a little edge. I feel like he was probably a little bit of
he had some really funny bits.
A little needler. Oh. Yeah.
He wasn't. He had a reputation for being somewhat curmudgeonly, but he also seemed like he was a gentleman.
Yes. He was an old school. And of course, it's kind of ironic that he and Sean Connery passed at the same time.
Celebrity Jeopardy in heaven.
Because of Celebrity Jeopardy in heaven.
I don't know.
Will Ferrell.
I'll tell you guys, I saw Trebek do a short demo of the IBM Watson thing, because that was like 2012, 2013, when they were talking, like Watson beating Jeopardy. So we traveled up to, I forget the town, but where the IBM headquarters is, and got to see him at least host that. That was pretty cool.
I bet that was really fun. Yeah. It's fun to watch shows like that.
I reach for my card.
Okay. this would be one to watch if you haven't seen the Celebrity Jeopardy with Sean Connery.
For the new generation. You got to make it viral for the new generation.
Yeah, those are classic.
Kanye, cut it down into 5 seconds. Make it a TikTok.
then they'll watch it.
Or a Quibi.
Is there a way to
make this a quick bite of content?
It'll never, it's never going to survive because it's too long. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next time. Another Twit.
Amazing.
Is it the can?